Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Ryan Malar, you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. The Net Live. It's a rainy day here in SoCal. 24 hours of crazy rain going on around here. 21st of March. Welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Barnett with Chris Geeter McGee and Jeremy Roche, DJ Roche, up here in the loft, ready for another good program. Hey, we've got a good program lined up for you here today. We have USA assistant coach and technical manager. That's for the women's side of the game. Jamie Morrison is going to be joining us. This is a guy who worked with the men's team through 2008 as a technical coordinator and is now coaching a group of all-stars, six Americans on the team in the Austrian League playing in Champions League. It's the same thing Hugh McCutchen did back in 2002 with Reed Pretty, Phil Etherton, Brooke Billings, Rich Lamborn, and others. It's a kind of a neat gateway. So we want to talk to him about his progression as a coach and playing and coaching Americans in Austria. We also have Mike Lingenfelter from Munciana, director of Munciana Volleyball Club. He's going to come in and talk a little bit about juniors volleyball, just another source we have out there for volleyball in the juniors level. Then we have Jen Kessie going to join us here on the program. Finally, Jen Kessie, beach volleyball star, world champion.
At big day point. For you, Barney.
Yes. Maybe not for my marriage, but a big day for me.
Big day for you. You've been talking about her coming on for over a year.
There have been a lot of things dropped about Jen Kessie on this show. Finally, she's going to be here, and she's going to decide who's better for her, me or this little guy next to me with the Dr. Dre headphones on.
I don't think it's going to be a competition.
Well, you better get your hair gel out if you have, you're going to have any chance at all. Of course, we'll have the AVCA College Volleyball Weekly coming up every week. We like to do that. Jay, Rob, Mike Sonheimer going to join us and talk about the rundown for the men as the men near playoff time here coming down to the end of the season. Also, a big interview with Doug Beal recorded this past week. Doug Beal reached out to us following the comments last week made by Kerry Walsh on the program here about beach qualification. We had an opportunity to talk to Doug about that, and he has some detailed information and I think some new stuff that people haven't heard about how that process is going to go forward.
Educating us.
That's what we're trying to do.
I think everyone in the beach community needs an education on a qualification, the tours that are happening. I think there's still a lot of unanswered questions when it comes to beach volleyball, and we are late into March.
This was Carrie last week on the show, what she had to say about it. Rain? Oh, muted.
To your associate.
There we go. Let's try that
again. Let's do that one more time.
Let's try that again. So this is Kerry Walsh last week on the program talking about beach qualification.
You know, it's definitely a work in progress. I know that USAV sent a proposal to USOC that they're waiting approval on. And I'll speak for myself. I don't agree with their proposal. And so we're hoping that we can come to some point of partnership and we can say, you know what, for this year, we don't want to throw in a haphazard process. Let's, you know, we want to get the best teams out there. We want to win as many medals as possible. Let's, you know, maybe revert to the old process, and then for 2016, we'll knock it out of the park. Because, you know, the U.S. deserves to have a domestic component as far as the trials are concerned, or as far as the qualification process is concerned. My fear is that, you know, I feel like a one or two tournament trials event really is a disservice to the country and disservice to the players, because to win gold medals in the Olympics, you need to prove yourself against the international teams and not American teams.
And Misty,
I think swimming has amazing trials. I think track does too, but we're a team sport. We don't play against clocks or judges, and we need to prove ourselves.
Okay, so I know some of you out there did not hear it. If you're listening to the podcast, you certainly did hear it. Some of you out there should be hearing stuff now. We will play Kerry again later in the show. Had a couple of settings that were wrong here in the studio. Everything should be corrected now. But we will play that Kerry audio later in the program, and then we will follow it up with Doug Beal's information about that. I think even some of what Kerry said will be clarified through Doug's interview. So it's going to be a very interesting show. Lots of good stuff coming up here. I wanted to touch on last week for a moment. We had Misty Carey last week. Big announcement the week before, back together. And going forward, we also had Hugh McCutchen talking about his situation. Any thoughts on last week, Geeter?
Yeah, I'll start with Carey and Misty. I think, you know, them coming together, and I think I mentioned this last week, I think I look at it two ways. As a fan of the game and an announcer of the game, I think beach volleyball needed some good news and some excitement. And I think them coming back together and going for London and going for a third gold medal gives the sport a boost, a much-needed boost. I think it creates some drama, some excitement. There's another side of me that, you know, is friends with Nicole as well, like I am with Carey and Misty, and was bummed for her because I know, you know, when Carey reached out to Misty in November and asked if she was coming back, she said no. She committed to Nicole. And I had talked to both of them separately while their partnership was starting to bloom and the chemistry. They were becoming really good friends. So I know Nicole got hurt in this process. It is part of the business. I understand that. But there is a little part of me that was real interested to see how Nicole and Carey were going to do, because I always thought that they would be a great team, played in a couple tournaments together and won. So I definitely see both sides. Put all that away, Carey and Misty back together again. Unbelievable for the sport. Unbelievable sport. And I think there's a lot of questions out there. How are they going to be? Are they still going to have that dominance? Are Jen and April now the number one team? Jen and April scared of them? I don't think they are. They had a little success when they were at the top of their game. How is it going to be now? I think all those things are intriguing to me. There's a lot of drama around it, and I'm pretty fired up to see how the process goes.
Yeah, I think when you look at Misty coming back, Misty carried that name, that brand. It really is a brand at this point. If you're Carey, I think she thought about it and thought about Nicole, but I can't believe there was any question in her mind that she would say yes. It was just a matter of how do I deal with the fallout from it, because I have to say yes to this opportunity. Forget the on-court stuff, which at this point is an unknown. Carey threw two kids, Misty threw an injury, pretty significant injury. Who knows what's going to happen? Everybody's a little bit older. So that may or may not be there. We'll wait and see for this season. But certainly the branding and the recognition and what it does for the sport and for them as a team, you had to go for that.
And I think Carey, having Misty fly out, and whatever that personal conversation was, they shared a little bit with us. Misty had to convince Carey that this was a go and that she wanted to do it. And I think that's all Carey needed to hear. Carey never made – she always told us, whether it was on – ABC broadcast, whether it was in an interview with us, that she wants to play with Misty.
Right.
But I think when she was convinced that Misty was done, there was no question Nicole was going to be her partner. But when Misty comes back, as you said, I don't think there was ever a doubt. As long as Misty was going to convince her, she was going to go back.
And it is too bad we'd never get to find out what a Carey Nicole partnership really could have been. Now, could be some injuries. Who knows what happens down the road? Hopefully not. But you never know what happens down the road and how things shake out. May still get a chance to see Nicole and Carey, and who knows how that relationship is, but we'll talk to Nicole about that at some point. Hugh McCutchen.
I loved the Hugh interview. I thought he said some real, real great points to the fact that this was a move that was great for my family. He was taking his time, putting all the ducks in a row. I mean, people have to realize there's the who's going to be in the Minnesota positions. How is that going to go for the next year and a half? What's going to happen with the women's national team with all the rumors and everything circulating and all the message boards? Stayed out of the way, made what decision was right for him. I've always said Hugh has put in how many years, Barney? 8 years traveling.
8 years internationally. So far.
You can understand it because you've done it. None of us can understand that. I mean, the time that he has put in, the medals that he's won, the gold. I'm excited that he is staying with the women's national team. I've made that clear on this show. I think that's the right thing to do, and I'm fired up to see how London goes. But I'm excited for Wiz and their family. I think it's a no-brainer. It's the perfect college for him to be at. That's where she's from. They have their resources there. They're going to build a nice life together. They deserve it. Good for him. I think it makes women's college volleyball even better. Couldn't be happier.
As soon as that Minnesota job came up, Hugh's name was there.
No question.
Because of the connections that Wiz has back there with her family. And the support of family is so critical when you have kids, and they have one. I'm sure they'd like to have more. One thing that I'm kind of sad about, and we've talked about on this show for a long time with Reed and the men's national team, that loss of Hugh was a big one. To watch Hugh leave their team after not the success, not the medal. The medal is, just is. It's the building of that culture and going on that journey and the refining of a team atmosphere and a way of doing or a way of being a member of the national team and functioning as the representative of our country. Hugh had done a terrific job of getting guys to buy into that. And it took a long time. There was a lot of pushback. 05, 06, not great results either year. They, of course, they moved to Anaheim, a lot of trouble. But 07, you started to see it come around. And 08, it peaked right on time. And it was really a special thing to be a part of.
Masterful, actually. I mean, the way that it went down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't have scripted it better, right?
No.
I mean, you were part of it.
And to watch that kind of disappear. And not that Allen Knipe hasn't done what he can, but it's just different. I mean, Allen is a different coach. You're going to have differences, period. But to watch that go by the wayside was very difficult for the men. And now I think for the women who are involved in a similar type of change, I mean, they're changing because it's a bigger world of volleyball. They're changing not only a lot of the cultural stuff that the men had to work on, but also the women are making greater technical changes, I think, than the men because they come from such diverse coaching backgrounds. You know, if you played for a Nebraska or a Texas or a Tennessee or anywhere else, SC, there's all these different theories on how to do things, and then you come into the national team, and to get everyone on the same page, I think, is more of a challenge with the women than it is with the men. And they're in the middle of that, and they've had some good results, and you start to see some of that change. We're seeing a similar type event because obviously Hugh has refined what he did with the men and reflected on it and now implemented it with the women, and you're going to see that go away also. And now we know it's going away. And it's a shame that you couldn't have Hugh stay in that position and continue to establish that culture and groom someone behind him for a long time so that that culture was more consistent. So I think that that's a loss for our national team programs as a whole, that that's not going to continue. But I'm, like you, very happy for Hugh and the situation that it sets up for he and his family.
We've talked on this show about whether the USA job, whether it's men or women, how big of a job is it in the world of volleyball for coaching? I thought Hugh's answer was interesting there, too. He called it the pinnacle.
The purest form of coaching.
The purest form of coaching. I thought that was really cool. He had some great things to say about being a dad that really put it in perspective as well, about, hey, I'm a father. You know, and when he's making his decisions, he's thinking about family first, and I think that's really important. And that's kind of the culture that he brought to that men's team. You know, you guys really became a family and really had each other's back. And as you said, he peaked at the right time. I think he brings that not only to his daily life but to his coaching style, and that's what makes him one of the best in the world.
He brought the idea of mutual respect back to the team and then how important that was. And that's one thing I took from my time on the national team. And you tell young players and players on my – any team that I coach, said, look, you don't have to like each other. You don't have to hang out. Not that important. What you have to do is respect one another and what the other person brings to the team when we're here doing our work as this group, trying to be, in the case of the national team, the best team in the world. You have to respect what people bring. And I went through a time period where that wasn't there on the national team. It was a bunch of rats scratching and clawing over the last piece of cheese. Mm-hmm. And it's a baloney. It's a terrible way to run a program, a company, a group of people.
Can't win that way.
No, and we didn't. We didn't, because when things were tough, you crumbled. And when things were good, fine, they're good. But as soon as things got tough, all those divisions show up.
You became a broadcaster after you left the national team, so you were a part of that Olympic run, and a lot of those guys were your teammates. Did you see the change happening? Did you, I mean...
Absolutely.
You were still in the gym a lot, obviously, and watching and best friends with those guys. So you saw it happening over time. Were you proud of that? Did you feel part of that? What were your thoughts when it was going down? Did you know how special it was?
I didn't know it was going to produce a gold medal until very close to the Olympics. And even then, you don't know. But I knew going into that tournament, they were the best team. But to watch the changes from really when I left the team in 02, I was hurt. I didn't leave. I was around, but I wasn't in the gym all the time. And then came back to the team full-time late 03 on through 04. Not only was I different, but I did see the difference in what was happening there. And the 04 team and the results there and the way things went down are the seeds for 2008. And I was glad to see Hugh McCutchen take over. My one question for Hugh was, could he transition from being the assistant, which is sort of a bridge between the head coach and the players? It's an interesting role where you have to kind of – you're not quite on either side, really. You have to kind of play both sides when you're really effective at it.
Sure.
Could Hugh make that change to being the head coach? And I thought he did terrific at it. Obviously, the results were there, but even through – his communication, his openness of communication was something that the guys took a while to get used to, but then appreciated greatly.
Men's volleyball, especially men's volleyball, at that level, the indoor national team level, how much cred do you have to have as a coach as well? You can't just be a guy that's done some club volleyball, that's been an assistant maybe at college, and walk in and just all of a sudden assert yourself. You got to have some cred with the guys.
Yeah, the guys are going to kick back. And this is one of the questions I have for Jamie is, which group of athletes is more challenging to coach, men or women? Because I think it's men, personally. Because in my own experience, watching others, but also me, you walk into the gym and you're the technical coordinator, great, you watch a lot of video, good for you. It doesn't necessarily make you someone who's going to be coaching at this level. You've never coached at any other level, really, that anyone's seen, and you show up in our gym and you're coaching us. There's a little bravado there from guys. But now Hugh will tell you the other way. Say, hey, take from everyone that you can, which I think has some validity. And say, hey, this guy is in our gym. He's watching us play a lot. He's observing. He's here because he's good at what he does, and you should pay attention and give some value to what he says. I think it's a difficult line to walk with guys versus girls.
Yeah, I've been coaching girls, I think, 19 years now. And during those 19 years, I've also coached boys volleyball, boys basketball, and boys football at one time or another. And I've coached more girls than guys. But one thing I always found with guys is if you have that credibility or that respect from them, it can be an unbelievable experience. You can really mentor. And I'm talking high school guys,
yeah,
high school, college. And it can be such a great experience. I had a text from one of my former players last night who happened to be at the Laker game. And it was just really cool. You know, that was 2000 we were together, 1999, you know, and he still has my number and threw out the text. It was a special moment that I get when I coached guys. But coaching girls, I feel like they absorb, they're sponges. They're so much more willing to learn, you know. But it's different for me being a male coach in a girls' volleyball world. You know, the mentorships I had with the guys were definitely different. But you got to come at them with a different style.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. You got to somehow, whether it's you played or whatever, you have to earn that respect somewhere, on the court, off the court. They have to see you in a certain way, and then you can get to them. And not all teams. You'll have some very, very special teams, but you'll have some nightmares as well.
I think Rob Browning went through a little bit of that. He was a guy who came in as a technical coordinator through 2004, and Rob would kind of try and poke his nose in here and there with stuff, and wasn't well received, especially by the guys that had been there 6, 8 years. It's like, Rob, not from you. Not from you. And
know your role.
Exactly.
I mean, that's literally exactly. That's,
Rob,
how,
I've been doing
that's
this
how I felt as a player.
I've been doing this
know
for 10 years. You rolled in the gym a year ago or a year and a half ago. You watched some video. It's not going to work for me, man.
I remember in college in Arthur's, 4 coaches. You knew who the head was. You knew which assistant was badass. You knew which assistant you can kind of roll over, but you liked him. And then you knew your guy that was there once in a while and was more of the video guy, and you respected his what he said. But you got to know your role.
Some of it's in the approach too, because if you're the video guy, you can't come at it head on. You got to come at it from sideways. Maybe ask the guy if he's interested, or hey, I saw something. If you want to come in and look at it, approach it more sideways than head on. You can't hit it the same way a head coach could hit it with that respect, where the players are going, okay, my head coach is telling me something.
That's why I think it would be unbelievable if Hugh can come in this 4 years, create that culture with his staff, and if they medal to go gold medal, men in 08, and any kind of medal in 2012, I just think you could walk away at that point and say, what else can be done? I mean, it'd have to be one of the great performances of all time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, if you want to get in the show, 347-677-1525. We'd love to take calls on at any time about any topic we've talked about. Previous shows coming up on this show. Still have Jen Kesey, Doug Beal, Jamie Morrison all coming up.
Just so you know, it doesn't frustrate Barney and Jeremy and Reed too much, but I do whine about it a lot during the week. For some reason, I want people to call in.
And then people comment all week about how you're begging. Begging for callers.
Well, we get a lot of great emails, by the way, thenetlive@gmail.com. I started checking those out. I didn't realize how many we got. That's been kind of, you and Reed taking the charge there. But people have some great points on there, great questions. I've had some great Twitter questions come my way. Who's the most underrated beach volleyball player of all time? We'll have to hit up that later. Thought that was a great question.
The most hated beach volleyball player of all time?
We've had that one as well.
We will get to these. It's been a busy time. We talked about how this is kind of the downtime of volleyball, and we were sort of in a lull because the national teams aren't active, the beach isn't active, men's college is just sort of in the middle of the season, women's college isn't going. There's not that much happening, and then all of a sudden, Misty Carey get back together. We get Hugh McCutcheon, who made his decision. We get him on air. Now we have Doug Beal coming. So the story's telling itself a little bit, but we will get to a lot of those topics and those fillers that people have sent us. We do have Brandon Rosenthal on the line. Not sure what he wants. He better have a strong take this week. He was talking about Jersey Shore last week. And Brandon, tell us all about it here.
What's up, boys?
How are you?
Fantastic. Yourselves?
Swell.
Hey, I like what you're saying about you. I think you guys bring up some great points. You know, my question to you, Barney, having been through that national team program and seen the change, any bit of you that kind of wish you were still playing?
Oh, absolutely. No, I definitely wish that I could have continued playing and continued learning from Hugh, but also learning about myself as a player and as a person. I think I'd finally figured it out. I liked playing again. I enjoyed it, and it wasn't always the case. And I related well with my teammates and fit well with the team, and people around me were better. So I definitely wish that would have been able to continue. That's where I think you see the genius in some of these great athletes, that they figure it out. The mental and the physical part are at 95% of peak, and they're able to play in that space for a long period of time. And for some athletes like myself, the body just gives out, and you have to find a different way to be in the sport. But definitely disappointed that I wasn't able to remain a part of that, although I'm glad that through broadcasting I've at least been able to remain in touch with it. Brandon?
Hello?
Good
yeah,
stuff.
I'm here.
Good stuff. We need you to bring Jersey Shore information next week for us.
Hey, Jersey Shore. We got Ronnie and Sammy still on the breakup. And, Snooki's still doing her thing. Pauly D's looking strong.
What is her thing? I don't quite understand what Snooki's thing is, other than being slightly rotund and drunk.
Just make $5 million a
year. Yeah. You know, Snooki's kind of the kingpin of the whole operation. I mean, everybody thinks the situation is running the show, but it really revolves around Snooki if you watch closely.
Do we need a Snooki on this show?
What's that?
Do we need a Snooki on this program?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, ratings. I mean, look at it. I mean, look at the ratings on their show. Snooki wrote a bestseller, or at least, I don't know.
She didn't write it.
Hold on, she wrote.
She didn't write it.
Bestseller.
Not a chance.
Somebody else wrote it.
Last time I checked, you, me, Jeremy, Reed, and Geeter don't have a bestseller, so we can't really talk.
Who could be our Snooki? Who could we bring in on this show that could be our Snooki?
Well, I mean, you're basically going out on a limb to say they're an absolute train wreck. So I don't know if that's one of those things you want to just throw out there to your guests or to your friends and say, hey, you're our Snooki.
Maybe we need to think about that.
You know, I think CJ brought something of that kind of character. I don't think Matt Boyce is a train wreck, but I definitely think Matt Boyce can carry some of the same kind of conversations.
He has definitely shown his value.
So he's in the running to be our Snooki.
He's in the running to be our Snooki. Maybe we ask him.
What about Donnie Killian?
I can't think of anything related to Donnie Killian.
Yeah, to put Donnie Killian and Snooki in the same breath is almost appalling. I mean, Donnie is a well-respected man in this community.
I think Donnie's more of a situation. Mike the situation, you know? What about... This takes you back to Pepperdine, Derek Beard.
Oh, dude, you're going way inside baseball at this point. You're so inside baseball. Nobody knows Derek Beard, redheaded guy.
Hey, you do, though. And
I do.
He's your Snooki.
Brandon, thanks for calling.
Always, guys. Keep up the good work.
All right, later. I've got to think about who our Snooki would be. Give that some more
time. It's not Donnie Gilliam.
No. All right. The Net Live here on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. Jamie Morrison up next. Still to come, Doug Beal, Jen Kessie. She's going to give me the rose, Jeremy. Don't even think about it.
That's how I feel about your comment right now.
The Net Live, right back.
Hey, parents. Do you know about the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Day and night, I toss and turn, I keep steps in my mind. I look for peace, but see, I don't attain. What I need for keeps the silly game we play. Now look at this. Madness the magnet keeps attracting me. I try to run, but see, I'm not that fast. I think I'm first, but surely finish last.
Couple of days here. That's like 3 feet of rain somewhere else. There's trees falling over, people floating away in cars, river swift water rescues.
You know, during the break, I was thinking about what a great first segment that was. Serious, a lot of volley, and then all of a sudden Snooki took over for about 3 minutes, and I think that's 3 minutes too long. Bottom line is, if Donnie Killian's a god, Snooki's not.
She was on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine.
Don't tell me that.
I almost retired from music.
There's a lot of complaint about that when that happened. Hey, we've got a couple of callers. 209, you're on the Volleyball Network, or the Net Live. Welcome. 209. Great, I can hear the show in the background, but person's not responding. Thank you. All of a sudden, all our callers cleared out. 949, welcome to the Net Live. This whole
hey,
call.
Brian, it's Jamie.
No screening. Perfect. Jamie Morrison, our first
there
interview call.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, Jeremy. Jamie, I was a little hesitant to introduce you. So
yeah,
I'll give you
you're all good.
Jamie Morrison, technical coordinator for the men's gold medal team in 2008, yeah. Assistant coach and technical coordinator for the women's national team. Currently, he's also the head coach of the Austrian Post Schwechat. I don't even know how to say it, team.
It took me about 6 months to learn.
Six players, including Jill Collymore, Alexis Crimes, Jessica Jones, Kamari Miyashiro, and Angie Presti and Courtney Thompson. You guys are having a good season over there. Jamie, welcome to Net Live. Appreciate you spending some time.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your team over there in Austria. So you have six Americans, and you're competing in Champions League. How did this whole process come about to put this team together?
Well, you can rewind probably back to 2002, and you're familiar with it. You were here, and the club offered the same opportunity to the men's national team. And they offered to send five, six Americans over here to play for the Hot Volleys, which is kind of a brother organization of SVS Post. And it worked out well. They did all right in Champions League, and Hugh McCutcheon was coaching that team. And flash forward about 6 years later, they approached Hugh about the same opportunity with the women's national team. And
okay.
We jumped at a chance. And to have the opportunity to train six young Americans who might have a potential to influence the Olympic team, whether it be in 2012 or 2016, it was a great opportunity. So gathered up six girls, best six that we could find for this opportunity, and away we went. And, yeah, we had a great season, and we're kind of winding things down now.
Tell us about your record this year.
To be honest with you, we've been playing in so many competitions. I believe it's something like 26-5. The little sister to Champions League. So it's Champions League, CEV Cup, and then there's Challenge Cup down below. But we played in that, and we made it a lot further than I think the club was even expecting. We made it into the challenge round, which is basically the third-place teams from each pool of Champions League drop down. So we ended up losing to a Champions League team, but we finished in the fourth round of that, which is a good finish for us. We also played in a Middle European League, which took the top two teams from each country in Middle Europe and pitted them against each other. So we finished second to Prussia, which is another Champions League team. And with both those teams, we were right there. So it was a good competition, a good year. Right now we're playing in the Austrian playoffs, which – the level definitely isn't as high.
Yeah.
We should win, but a good chance to get better at playing volleyball.
How is it working for Peter Kleinman, the owner of the club?
You know, Peter actually works only on the men's side.
Oh, good for you.
Obviously, yeah, exactly. So I work with a guy, Carl Hansel. But I haven't had any Peter Kleinman hole.
Oh.
But the girls have nicknamed him the Count. I heard he was nicknamed the Vampire before that. So the nickname has stuck. But he's actually been good. I think he's calmed down in his old age a little bit.
Wow, that's good. I had a chance to play for Peter Kleinman. He stomps around in a black suit, black suit, long black hair, and he wears his suit coat like a cape.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's not a black suit. It's definitely a top. It's not a suit coat. It is a suit cape.
Hey, Jamie, it's Geeter. Who's easier to work with, national team men's athletes or national team women's athletes?
It's different. And obviously it depends on the athlete. You got certain athletes on the men's side that are difficult to work with, certain on the women, and then you have certain ones that are just blessed children that basically will do whatever you ask, and you have to fight to get them out of the gym. In all honesty, the one thing is just on the women's side, it's a little bit lighter. They're just goofier in general. But I've honestly enjoyed both, I would say, equally. There's definitely things I miss about being with the men's in terms of the style of volleyball. It's similar, but I can't say that one of them is harder or easier to work on or work with. It's more of an individual case-by-case basis.
Jamie, you've worked with Hugh for a long time. What have you seen different in his approach as he adapted his system to the women's team?
System-wise, volleyball, it's wide. The biggest difference, I think, is just relationships. And as you know, he's so good at that. I think it's been more vital on the women's side, just in terms of having an individual relationship with each athlete and making sure you nurture that every single day and make sure that they know you care. I'd say that's the biggest thing that he's adjusted to. And then as I think as a staff, and I mean I can say it individually, and I think him too, from an outsider looking kind of in, he's grown as a coach, no doubt. So I think he's better than he was when he started in 2005 with the men's program.
Listen to Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to USA Women's Technical Coordinator and Assistant Coach Jamie Morrison, who's coaching a team over in Austria. Jamie, having played there, I was forced to live in the Austria Trend apartment hotel. And I'm just wondering if you're still living there just down the way from your own gym, or do they provide you with an apartment?
You know, I started out there for about 3 weeks, and about 2 weeks in, there were about, I think, 14 Japanese tour groups that were cycling in and out of the Austria Trend Hotel. And I finally gave up on it, and I talked to the club, and I said, are you paying this much? If I find something, will you move me? So they said yes, and I had to get out of Dodge. It was too close to the gym. It really wasn't a ton around. And they provided me with a really nice apartment down near the center of Vienna.
Were they asking you for too many pictures, Japanese tourists? What, going on, partying too much?
Exactly, throwing up too many peace signs.
Jamie, how well have you gotten to know Karch for these last couple of years?
Yeah, very well. I mean, when you're on the road, you spend so many hours with the staff that you're working with. I have to take a step back every once in a while just because, like most people, he was the childhood idol growing up.
Do you get nervous when you see the veins pop out? What are your thoughts when you see that?
You know, he's been fairly controlled. There's only been a couple instances where you just hear a clipboard just slam to the floor, and he's not throwing it, he's just dropping it. But, the veins only come out occasionally in practice, but the nice thing is when he does it, you know he means business.
Oh, it's the best.
But, yeah, he hasn't torn down any nets. He's been good.
I love it.
Jamie, you talked about this being a similar process to what Hugh McCutchen went through when he was an assistant coach and then got an opportunity to be a head coach over there in Austria. What are your personal goals as a coach?
I'd say most people, I don't want to say all, want to go out and have their own program one day. So it's definitely one of my goals is to go out and be a head coach at the highest level I can. I mean, obviously, if I can follow in Hugh's footsteps and be the head coach of the national team, that would be amazing. But obviously, there's some work that has to be done to get to that point. If I can go out and be the head coach of a Division I program after this, I'm happy with that. And that's definitely my ultimate goal, which is one of the main reasons I decided to come out here and do this. It's been an amazing learning experience just every single day. Just either something that happened and I made a mistake, or there hasn't been too many of them, but there definitely have been some, or just the experiences that you're thrown into that you just have to learn by doing. So I'm hoping the kind of culmination of all these things kind of prepares me for what's next. And hopefully in 2 years, if a job opens up after we're done with the Olympics, I'm ready to go take it.
Well, it's a great opportunity for your development. Now talk a little bit about the development of the players that you have there, the Americans. You have six Americans on that team, all of them trying to compete for spaces on the women's national team upcoming for the Olympics in 2012. Who's made some huge strides with you this year?
They all have in individual ways. For me, I would say one of the biggest ones is Tamara Miyashiro. She's been extremely steady for the entire year, which is something you look for in that leader position. And she's just steadily improved as the year's gone on, or as the season's gone on. So she's one that stands out to me, but honestly, in all ways, I look at Angie Pressey, and she's passing a lot better than she was when she first got here, which was one of the things holding her back from making a team to go travel with the national team. Courtney Thompson, our setter, is clean release back, and she's learned a lot about running an offense. You have our two middle blockers, Alexis Crimes, who kind of her goal this year is to become better offensively, and there's matches where she's taken over and hit 60-70%. Jesse Jones, our other middle blocker, she's honestly one of the fastest players I've seen pin-to-pin. So her goal is to get a chance to come in and compete with the national team. She's earned that while she's been here, and she'll get a chance to come in and try out. And if she makes it, she makes it. If not, not. But she's earned that.
Yeah.
And then Jill Collimore, unfortunately, sprained her ankle about a week after she got here. And she flew home about a month ago. So she's rehabbing her ankle, trying to get ready for the summer to see if she can make a push for 2011.
Jamie, we appreciate you spending the time with us here on the show. I got one question on your way out. You guys still having to adjust your practice schedule at the Budo Center because of raves?
Yeah, it's an interesting place. They actually built a new gym here. You'd be surprised. $40 million facility.
Whoa.
So I do have to adjust that one for balls and government gatherings.
Hey, you know what? The vampire, Peter Kleinman, getting it done, $40 million facility. That's
the
not
Count
bad.
Now. He's been renamed.
The Count. Well, if you get a $40 million facility made, you get some sort of title. Jamie, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the year.
You talking glow sticks?
Thanks.
Raves?
Oh, glow sticks. Yeah.
We do.
Barfing. It's ugly. All right, take it easy, Jamie. Jamie Morrison.
Yep.
Second quarter here. Assistant coach, women's national team. Head coach, Austria. It's a great learning experience, boy. It's a terrific opportunity for Jamie.
Got a bright future. Hugh calls him one of the bright young coaches in the country today.
I love it that he threw out there he wants to take over the national team. It's ambition right there. I love it.
There's someone who values the job, Barney.
There you go. People want it. Hey, we're going to move from the national team to juniors.
We're going to move to the juniors level. You know, we have Ojan on a lot of times from Coast Volleyball Club. He gives us a great perspective, and me coming from the West Coast and coaching a club out here on the West Coast, Sport Check. I think we have too much West Coast bias, actually, and we talk a lot about what's going on in Southern California volleyball, Northern California volleyball, and in Texas. But we thought we'd bring in someone who's one of the best trainers in all of the country. He's got a great reputation from the Midwest. He runs Munsiana Volleyball Club in Indiana. Great guy. He's had a number of college players that have become All-Americans and really just does a great job. We thought, let's bring him in. Mike Lingenfelter used to play at Ball State. And let's get a little East Coast, Midwest flavor because I think it's lacking on the show. Mike, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. Thanks for having me on.
I do know that you are a Boston Celtics fan, so right off the bat, it's a little weird to come on the show and preach that, but we'll give you a couple seconds just to at least, you know, claim what you can.
I tell you what, I grew up in the Havlicek, Cowens, Paul Silas. That was a different era, so I just stuck with them forever. So that's, you know, when you brought up the Lakers thing yesterday, I at least had to fire a shot across the bow.
Yeah, he did. We were just kind of going back and forth, texting each other, talking about the show, setting it up, and I told him I was going to work the Lakers game, and he just came right in with a hammer on me, and I actually appreciated it. Told me to say hi to the Kardashians and kind of heckled a little bit, and I said, you know what,
you
I like
almost
Mike.
Almost got a little glimpse of what we had in Indiana not too long ago with our test yesterday. I was watching the highlights. Looked like he was getting a little amped up.
Oh, yeah. By the way, he got hooked up with Gerald Wallace, you saw 04, the Palace, all over again, didn't you?
Exactly.
Hey, real quick, you talked about Indiana, and you see a school like Butler, who's really like a modern-day Hoosiers, and what it can do to the state of Indiana. Volleyball now is getting very, very big in the Midwest. Can you talk about like the fan support and how people are really starting to play this game and learn it and love it?
Well, I tell you what, obviously, you made reference to Ojan earlier. You know, and it's hard to follow in that guy's footsteps ever when they're talking about either talk shows or coaching. But, you know, he and I had talked about it quite a bit because he had some connectivity to the Midwest and talked about how much it's grown over the years. And I think that what has happened is when we first, we were just talking about this morning, right before I got on here, about how when we were growing up, in the Midwest, you hated the West Coast. Because the West Coast, those were the guys. Those were the guys that were always winning. Those were the guys that knew volleyball. They were the guys that kind of grew volleyball. And what's happened subsequently over the last 10 to 15 years is there's been an influx of talent from the Midwest. In fact, Barney can tell you as well. I mean, so many good players coming from the Midwest to the West and vice versa.
Absolutely.
And I think it's really changed the culture. I think that once we had guys going and, going from the Midwest out to the West Coast, it kind of showed guys that it could happen. And then subsequently, when kids started coming from the West to the Midwest, it brought some of that culture, and that cross culture has really allowed volleyball to develop. And, it is huge. Some of the largest crowds in the country, are really between, Indiana and Nebraska. You put those schools in the mix, and those guys always are in the top 10 in attendance. You got Hawaii always dominating that, but for the most part, there's some schools that are Midwestern-based schools with Midwestern kids that are really starting to draw 3,000-4,000 fans per game.
Mike, you've sent so many kids to major colleges from Munsiana. Are you seeing more West Coast teams try to recruit your kids over the last few years, or is it still dominated with that more the Big Ten Big 12 schools?
We're still, you know, we still get hammered Big 10. You know, every now and then we have a kid that's a premier kid, you know, Darcy Dorton a couple years ago. Really came down to Stanford and Penn State. And she was one of the ones that really got a lot out of it. But we've had a lot of kids from the Midwest and the Indianapolis area that, you know, they've had kids at USC, kids at Pepperdine. You know, Montana's had kids at Pacific, UCLA, and, you know, across the board. I mean, it's growing a little, you know, but it's generally our real premier guys. That's a, you know, that's a big trip for those guys to make out. And still trying to get kids to leave the Midwest is a little difficult at times. You know, college coaches always say it's tough to get a kid out of Texas. The Midwest is kind of a cultural area, too, where they like staying fairly close to home. And to be honest with you, you know, the Big Ten, now with Nebraska being added to it, that's as good a conference as you're going to get. You got the Big Ten network, so these kids could be seen every week.
Yep.
You know, it's a big deal, and that's they're staying home for the most part.
Mike, more on juniors volleyball. You know, here in Southern California, the competition to get kids working our tryouts around each other has been really kind of, to be honest with you, a nightmare over the last few years, and it's gotten, you know, nasty at some points. What is it like for you guys now? I know you guys are pretty much the dominant club in the area, but are you seeing more competition and more clubs, you know, come up throughout the area?
Yeah, it's really amazing. Just when you think that the sport may well be saturated, you know, another club pops up and draws 20 more teams. You know, I think that we're kind of lucky in Muncie from the standpoint that we're away far enough from everybody else that we don't get into the kind of the rat race. But, yeah, we're not any different than everybody else. You know, I hear horror stories out of certain areas where they only do invitations only, or they're having their tryouts during the high school season, or having their tryouts immediately following the club season and signing this and signing that. And, you know, I hope that we can find a way to rectify that, because you don't want to get into being what we've disdained for all those years. You know, we always make reference to AAU teams buying kids, and I think it's important that we kind of get a handle on that quickly. But right now, we're in a pretty good spot. We're not fighting too much, and you know, kids are still allowed to make choices, and I think that's the bottom line.
Mike, I've seen some of the teams from out of our area. Dallas Premier looks real strong. I know Tampa's got a good team this year. Give us some more of the teams that, you know, we haven't seen. Munciana Sports Performance. Who are your maybe top five teams that you've seen so far?
Well, you know, we've seen, I guess if you look at Tawa's top 40 or whatever, we've played 16 of those teams. And, you know, there's some awfully good teams. Sports Performance is always good. You know, they're as well-trained as any group in the country. And, you know, right now they're struggling a little bit trying to get their system set. But you know that when they do, they're going to be in the hunt. They're always in the hunt. They've beaten us out of they're probably the only thing keeping us from winning six or seven straight national championships. And we've lost to them. I told somebody the other day we've lost to them in five national championship games. And somebody said, well, that sounds like a great rivalry. Well, that's I don't think the Hammer considers the Nail a rival, you know, considering that they've beaten us five out of seven of those, but they're always good. Sky High has a great team. It's a Chapman kid that's going to Wisconsin for them. is a great player. Kiva out of Louisville, always strong.
Always good.
They're as good a team as you'll see. Illini Elite is another Chicago area team. They're very, very strong. There's a couple of other teams that are on the edge of things. A5 out of Atlanta. I don't know if you hear much about those guys. It's probably the most athletic team I've seen in a long, long time. And then Team Z out of Cincinnati, and they're kind of notoriously always in the hunt. I think they got five kids on a team that are going to the Big Ten, you know, including a girl, Liz McMahon, that's going to go play for Hambly at Illinois. So there's a lot of solid teams, I think, that in – you know, in that last ranking that Tawa put out, like I said, I think that 16 or 17 of those teams in the top 40 are in this area. And the rest are, you know, pretty much California and Texas. There's a couple of Carolina teams thrown in there and a couple of Floridas. But this would be the probably the second largest pocket, I would think, other than those two big areas.
Hey, Mike, we got a packed show, but I wanted to thank you for coming on, and I wanted to get you to come on in a couple more weeks because I think we need your flavor. Will you come back on the Net Live?
Man, I'd love to.
Okay,
I'd
great.
Love to. I love to sit.
I want to get in. I want to get into the JVA and JOs and stuff
that
because
I think
we need to get educated more on that. So next time we have you on, we'll dive into that part. But that was a great job, great first showing, and thanks so much for taking your time, Mike, and great job.
Brother, I appreciate
good work.
It. And you guys keep doing what you're doing. It's good for the sport.
Sweet. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Mike from Muncieana. I like it. The hammer doesn't consider the nail a rival.
That was great.
Drop that one. I haven't heard that before.
I mean, you think about it. He's talking about probably six national championships he'd have. That's a lot of national championships. If it wasn't for the dominance of sports performance, and that's an incredible number. But Mike does it.
He's the Utah Jazz.
He is one of the great trainers and great coaches in all of American juniors volleyball. I mean, you want your kid. That's why college coaches love him. You know that if you go play for Mike and for that club, you're getting yourself a finished product.
I love it that we finally got somebody else in the show that is a fan of a team that actually has some sort of rivalry with you. I mean, we pretend that Jeremy's team has any rivalry with you, Lakers. It's just sort of built up for fun, but Mike's the real deal.
His Celtics are definitely a rival that I respect and hate all in the same breath. And, you know, now we got Ojan representing the West Coast. We got Mike representing the Midwest. We'll get a little more juniors. And, Barney, I saw you liven up a little bit. You were actually into it. I think we're starting to win you over.
I'll be all over the junior scene. I'll be checking the new polls weekly soon. Hey, we've been talking about it. We still have a big show coming up. Doug Beal audio coming up right now next. We still have Jen Kessie coming on the program and the College Volleyball Week with all of our correspondents. But last week we did have Carrie Walsh on the show. She mentioned that she did not care for the proposal for beach volleyball qualification for athletes for the 2012 Olympic Games from the United States. Played it earlier. Let's play it again. These are the comments made last week by Carrie Walsh about beach qualification.
You know, it's definitely a work in progress. I know that USAV sent a proposal to USOC that they're waiting approval on. And I'll speak up for myself. I don't agree with their proposal. And so we're hoping that we can come to some, you know, some point of partnership and we can say, you know what, for this year, we don't want to throw in a haphazard process. Let's, you know, we want to get the best teams out there. We want to win as many medals as possible. Let's, you know, maybe revert to the old process, and then for 2016 we'll knock it out of the park, because you know the U.S. deserves to have a domestic component as far as the trials are concerned, or as far as the qualification process is concerned. My fear is that, you know, I feel like a one or two tournament trials event really is a disservice to the country and disservice to the players, because to win gold medals in the Olympics, you need to prove yourself against the international teams and not American teams.
And Misty,
I think swimming has amazing trials. I think track does too, but we're a team sport. We don't play against clocks or judges, and we need to prove ourselves.
So that was Carrie Walsh last week talking about qualification, and we had an opportunity to sit down with Doug Beal. I did this past week and get Doug's clarification, I guess, on what's being proposed, why it's being held up, and you heard Carrie mention it about the one or two tournaments. Doug will cover that format. So this is Doug Beal earlier this week talking about beach qualification. Doug, thanks a lot for joining us here on the Net Live once again. It's good to have you. We haven't had you in quite some time. I want to start you out with, you know, last week we talked to Carrie and Misty upon their reunion, and Carrie indicated she didn't like the proposed beach qualification process. Can you tell us more about the proposed qualification process as it is now?
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. It's good to be with you. It's good to talk. The process that we're proposing is essentially an Olympic trials that will select the two teams that will represent the United States, or what we hope will be the two teams per gender. The FIVB limits the number of entries per country per gender to two, but we have qualified that number each Olympic Games, and we certainly would hope and expect that we would be able to do that again.
Yeah.
I think Olympic trials are they're new, certainly, for beach volleyball, and I can understand that there's a certain degree of uncertainty and anxiety, and that's certainly to be expected. I think it's important to know that we're not by any means the only sport that selects their athletes or nominates their athletes through a trials process. I think I'm accurate in telling you that 17 sports on the summer agenda and four or five on the winter select their athletes through some kind of a trials process.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really two points to this, or from our perspective, two primary rationales of why trials is the appropriate way. One is that essentially for 15 or 17 years here, we have been debating with the FIVB in partnership with the U.S. Olympic Committee, our beach athletes, and the AVP under several different leadership tenures within the AVP, that the process to select Olympic athletes solely from the FIVB tour is contrary to IOC regulations. And the principal regulation is that the National Olympic Committees have the right to name their own athletes. That is not the that's not the responsibility or the authority or the right of the international federations.
Right.
You know, they have the right to assign the overall process by which countries earn spots or positions in various sports, but not the individual, not to name the individual athletes who then occupy that country-earned position. And all of us collectively, and I want to, I guess, restate that because I think it's awfully important, the USOC, the AVP, the athletes, and USA Volleyball have collectively been petitioning the IOC to force the FIVB to change their system. Ultimately, we were successful. I suspect, in part because of the constant questioning and pressure that we brought to bear, but perhaps more directly because there was a change in leadership within the FIVB when Dr. Acosta retired and Jize Wong. I'm going to forget his name here.
Yeah.
Wei, Jisong Wei, became the new president. And, you know, it's an enormous accomplishment, I think, to get an IF to change. In fact, my understanding is a number of other IFs are actually trying to go the other way and recapture more control over the this Olympic qualification process. And it's easy to understand why they want to do it, because largely it's an enormous financial boon to that international federation. If they totally control the process, the marketing rights and the production, the television rights, et cetera, of their events go up enormously.
And this seemed to be what the argument was between the AVP and USA Volleyball a couple of years ago, is the AVP wanted control of that golden goose of Olympic qualification.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, I think to a certain degree, we could argue pretty effectively that the control that the FIVB has exhibited over their tour and making it the sole avenue for Olympic qualification has played an enormous role in dampening the efforts around the world to develop individual country domestic tours, which I think has played a very negative role in the growth of beach volleyball, in many parts of the world. The only places really that exist today with any kind of a national tour are in Southern Hemisphere locations, principally Brazil, that don't compete in any meaningful way with the season that the FIVB populates their tour with. So, anyway, so that's one big point. The FIVB tour has really operated in opposition to IOC guidelines, usurping the rights that belong to the National Olympic Committees to name their own athletes.
Okay. Point number two.
The second point, the second point is that trials, if done appropriately and with care and are established with, I think, the right processes, are a much more open, inclusive method to select the best teams to represent the United States who are the best at the moment closest to the games. One of the arguments that the AVP itself was making and was made very strongly in the article late filing in 2005 that questioned many of the operational behaviors of USA Volleyball was that the qualification procedure for beach volleyball should happen domestically in the United States because, and they cited several examples, we haven't been able to send our best teams because the FIVB process is a two-year-long procedure that in some cases can be secured or virtually secured by athletes in the first year, essentially making their performance in the second year, which is the Olympic year, a moot point.
Right.
And the process that we're proposing certainly takes into account long-term performance, both internationally and domestically, but requires that team to prove again, or those teams to prove again, that they're the best at a time relatively close to the Olympics, when they have to be at their best to earn one of those two spots for the United States. And, you know, there's a several, you know, sidelight issues, but in many senses, a team forming late or arriving to a high level of performance late is essentially blocked from even having an opportunity to qualify and represent the United States, even if they might be the very best or the second best team by the time of the Olympic Games. It's just not as open a fair process as one might think on the face of it.
So give us a rundown of how the proposal is structured now that a team would be able to come up late and peak at the right time to get to the Olympics. What's on the table at the moment?
Yeah, the process that we've proposed right now is a 10-team field, and actually it's up to a 10-team field per gender with a blend of performance that very much overweights or overvalues international success versus domestic success. But it requires a certain number of minimal competition or participations internationally and a certain minimum number domestically, with points being awarded to each finish, but the points are far greater for international participation because we don't disagree at all that the successful teams ought to be able to demonstrate on the FIVB circuit that they can play at a high level, and that's largely the population that they'll have to play against in the Olympic Games. But it shouldn't be 100% on the FIVB circuit, specifically to open it up to new teams or teams that are peaking later in the process. Then the trials that we're proposing are two-phase trials. In the first phase, a winner per gender will be the first nominee to represent the United States. And then the second week of the trials or the second weekend of the trials will select the second team. We're proposing that the top-seeded teams per gender in the first week be inserted into the trials at the semifinal level. So if you're the number one seeded team or the number one ranked team,
mm-hmm.
you start playing at the semifinal level. So you really only have to win two matches to secure your berth.
Okay.
And then in the second week, if you're the loser of the finals in the first week, you are seeded directly into the finals the second week. So certainly one of the concerns, one of the anxieties, I think, for players is the risk of a bad week or a bad day. That would negate my performance over a long period of time. And we, I think, very much understand that. Nobody's interested in creating a trials process that doesn't significantly favor the highest seeded teams. Everybody wants the best teams to represent the United States. So essentially, you'd have to lose twice if you were one of the top two seeded teams. To not ultimately represent the United States at the Olympic Games. And we think it's a very fair process. It's a very open process. And it gives, we very much believe, a much more open, balanced, transparent, non-political structure that will be incredibly positive for the growth of beach volleyball and players in a much broader range than can possibly earn spots through the FIVB circuit alone.
So what are the arguments then from the players that are going against that proposed plan?
I'm not sure I'm going to be very good at representing the views, but the ones that we've heard most about is They're hearing about the process very late, and I think that's a legitimate concern. The best alternative is that it's very difficult to allow players who are going to participate in a qualifying process to be embedded in the structure of that process. Players are very conflicted, and yeah. The range of opinions is going to be quite wide. I think we've reached out and heard many of the concerns that the players have, and we've tried to address those in the structure we put together. So getting the final details of the trials rather late, I think it is perhaps a legitimate critique, and we're sensitive to that, and we'd like to get it out sooner versus later. One of the other reasons for that is, unfortunately, the FIVB has put out a process whereby countries can earn spots, but the material they put out does not clearly answer every question that we have relative to how their process impacts our trials. And until we get those answered, and we've requested that information repeatedly from the FIVB with no definitive responses, we can't finalize the trials process. I regret that. I wish it wasn't the case. But to a certain degree, we're not in control of that.
At this point, when is the trials process slated to take place?
The two weekends that we have set right now are the last weekend of June 2012 and the first weekend of July. I think it's, 30 July 1 and 6, 7 July, I believe, are the dates, something like that.
So at this point, the players have well more than a year to prepare for this particular event.
Right, yeah. The first FIVB event of this season starts in about a month, and that's the first event that begins to qualify teams to earn country spots on the FIVB circuit. I think there will be approximately 20 or maybe 21 or 22 total events between 2011 and 2012 on the FIVB circuit that players can enter that will earn the country positions for the top 16 teams on the FIVB circuit.
So those the positions for the Olympic Games that the FIVB gets to determine how many there are per country, when will those be determined? Is that by this past season? Or this coming season, I guess, 2011?
It'll be determined by June 17th or 16th, 2012.
I see.
So every FIVB event that happens from mid-April of 2011, in about a month, to June 16th, I believe, will determine the final ranking within the FIVB calendar for the countries to earn positions. If, for example, if Brazil or if the United States had more than two teams in the top 16, you'd go to the 17th team or the 18th, et cetera. But the top 16 positions will earn those spots for their countries from the FIVB ranking at that point of June 16th, 2012.
Was there ever discussion of putting into place a system more similar to indoor where the country positions are qualified by a team, but that team is not guaranteed of that spot? And I guess we're talking about that here. But furthermore, the federation, USA Volleyball, would be in control of selecting the team without a trials process other than practice or maybe previous tournament results, but just selecting the team that would then represent the United States. Because that's how the indoor side of things is done. For our listeners that don't know, the team that qualifies, the 12 guys that qualify the indoor side for the Olympic Games, those 12 men or women don't necessarily make the Olympic team a year later or 9 months later.
Yeah, I think you raised two points. Number one, no, we never discussed simply identifying athletes. There really wouldn't be any rationale for doing that, in our view at least. And that would really be, I think, a process subject to tremendous criticism. That would be an enormously political process, not anything we're at all interested in doing. We've never discussed that at all.
Okay.
It makes some sense for a team or a multi-person team sport, like indoor volleyball, like basketball, like water polo, team handball, soccer, et cetera, because you have a large group of players participating in a training environment ongoing, but you're exactly right. The indoor team in any sport that qualifies the country for the Olympic Games is by no means guaranteed to be exactly the same makeup of individual athletes when they finally participate in the game. So what we're proposing for beach volleyball in a certain sense is exactly what occurs in virtually every other sport. But to reiterate, no, we never discussed at all simply USA Volleyball identifying athletes through any means from the FIVB circuit or any other reason. Trials is the only alternative method we've ever discussed.
The trials procedure as it's proposed now, how similar is that, or how does it compare to other countries and the way they're handling qualification for 2012?
You're talking specifically for beach volleyball.
For beach volleyball, yeah, correct.
Yeah, honestly, Kevin, I can't really answer that. First, this is the first Olympic Games where it's even been possible to run trials because of the change at the FIVB circuit. And I'm not aware of that. I know I've had conversations at FIVB meetings with other countries who are quite interested in this. I think it would have to depend on the popularity of the sport, the depth of the talent pool, et cetera. So I really can't answer that. I suspect there will be other countries that will use some kind of internal event or events, whether they call them trials or something else, to ultimately select the athletes that represent them in the Olympic Games.
Okay, you're listening to Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. It's our conversation with USA Volleyball CEO Doug Beal. Doug, I wanted to ask you, when you talk about we in deciding how the trials process should work, who is that we? Is that USA staff? Is that USAV board? Is that the USOC? Or is it a variety of those different people?
Yeah, it's USAV staff in conjunction with U.S. Olympic Committee. It's certainly not our board. The process was largely put together by our beach staff in conjunction with other senior staff. Certainly I was involved in that. But ultimately, we have to submit the process to a committee of the U.S. Olympic Committee that's called a trials or selection working group, and they sign off on it. They ultimately approve selection process or trials process for all sports, and they very much look at, is it the fairest, most open process that is likely to select or identify the very best teams that have the best chance, or the very best individuals that have the best chance to be successful at the Olympic Games. So we aren't done with that process completely, but we have begun it significantly.
And you said the FIVB and its rules are holding you up just a little bit. When does this process have to be completed in the trials? Process has to be announced and finalized for everyone to get ready for.
Yeah, there's actually no specific deadline, but we'd like to get it done here very quickly. Certainly, we think we ought to be able to get it publicized and available to the athletes before the start of the FIVB event. So that's less than a month away, and frankly, I think we can. There are two or three items that are, sort of up for discussion within the trials procedure. You know, what is the appropriate number of teams that ought to be in the event? And very honestly, it doesn't necessarily have to be the same number of teams for each gender. But that's discussable. I think we've proposed 10. That may be slightly on the high side. It might be 8. It might be 7. I don't know exactly the right number. We'd very much like to engage athletes and others in giving us some input to make that final determination. It can't be so little or so few teams that it's protected or exclusive event. And it certainly can't be so many teams that the possibility of somebody qualifying that really is not competitive exists.
Right.
So we're not sure what that number is, but it's likely never to be above or not above 10. The second is the issue that I just discussed with you a little bit. Where should essentially the spot earners, you know, those teams that have done the best on the FIVB circuit, who earn the spots for the United States as a country, where should they enter the trials process? Should they start at the beginning of the process and maybe play in some pools? Or should they enter at the semifinals? Or should they maybe enter directly to the finals? There's some mixed feedback that we've gotten, which doesn't surprise us, I think. I think players tend to view that from what they think might be best for them to play their best at that event.
Right, whatever position they're in, whatever benefits them is what they want.
And I'm not sure that we would expect players to give us any response other than that. I think it takes somebody who's a little bit removed to look at the overall history of events and what might be better for all the athletes to sort of resolve that issue. But anyway, that's an outstanding issue, I think. And third, what is the correct mix of participations to qualify athletes to enter the trials or to rank athletes who are eligible for the trials between domestic success and international success? I think we all agree that it should be overweighted toward domestic success. Is it 3-1, 4-1, 2-1? What's exactly the ratio? And I'm not sure we're going to ever come up with a perfect answer, and I suspect there'll be wide difference of opinion. But we have it right now quite overweighted toward international success.
Oh, okay,
maybe
it should be even more overweighted.
Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
You said domestic the first time. I was going to ask you that. It's weighted towards international success at this point.
Rather than domestic
success.
International success, correct. Yeah. If I misstated that, I apologize. Yeah, it should be overweighted toward performance on the FIVB circuit. The question is just how much overweighted. And then, you know, sort of involved in that is, you know, what's the minimum number of events that you should play in or have to participate in, both domestically and international. It shouldn't be very much, we think, to open it up broadly, but it also should be enough that you have established your success level or your likelihood of success, you know, should you be one of the qualified teams. And one of the other points I think that's really important to understand, as we understand the FIVB process right now, if we were to go back to only selecting our athletes exclusively from the FIVB Tour, in addition to, flipping 180 degrees on the position that we have all collectively taken over a very long period of time, I think we'd be putting a number of our teams potentially at great risk and eliminating a significant number of potentially successful teams. If there was an injury sometime after the middle of 2011, so relatively early in the process, we think that both of those players perhaps might never have a chance to even qualify, even if they were the number one ranked team at the point there was an injury, because the FIVB is requiring the teams to have 12 participations as a team to even be eligible. So if you have an injury when there are fewer than 12 events left, you really don't have any possibility to qualify. Additionally, if you form a partnership late, or your level gets, you know, increases late to the point where you now become more successful on the FIVB Tour, your possibility for qualifying has been dramatically reduced. The FIVB process is much more of a closed process, I think, than most people realize, and it far weights performance early in the process versus late in the process. We think we've come up with some balance to that. Is there any perfect process, Kevin? There isn't. Is there risk involved in any process? Absolutely. There's risk in anything. And that's kind of what sport is all about. That's what competition is about. But really what the USOC and we want to do is create, the best win-win we possibly can, a selection procedure that selects has the best chance of selecting the best teams, and an event that can significantly expose and broaden the growth of the sport. I think we can do that with trials, and I think we can, to as much a degree as possible, eliminate the risk of some team that isn't one of our best teams qualifying. I think that's really what we would like to do.
Doug, I think you touched on an important point there. And when the Olympic Games is coming up 9 months out, 6 months out, 3 months out, whenever the trials are held for a variety of different sports, whether it be swimming or track and field, it turns into a big television event and sort of a preview for those folks that only watch the Olympics when it comes to certain sports like swimming or track and field or volleyball. Would this broaden the opportunity to increase the visibility of those athletes? And what interest has there been from an NBC who broadcast the Olympics in broadcasting a beach volleyball trials?
Yeah, there's obviously significant interest from NBC, and we've shared that quite broadly with our board. NBC is in an interesting position. Their relationship as the Olympic broadcaster with the USOC gives them the ownership rights to Olympic trials for any sport that runs them, as well as Olympic exhibitions if you don't run trials. And so they own the trials. The key here is which of the Olympic sports they would put as broadcasting on the network. We have quite a high degree of confidence that that would be the situation for beach volleyball. There are only four or five of the trial sports that actually get on the network. You mentioned a couple, swimming, track and field, gymnastics, I suspect, and,
right,
and one or two others, which would include beach volleyball. It would be significant in exposing and promoting the sport, the individual athletes, hyping the Olympic Games. It would be significant. NBC has told us that it would be an opportunity just short of broadcast from the Olympic Games themselves in promoting the sport and enhancing the growth of the sport. And I think it would be a tremendously interesting show and would garner great ratings. Because beach volleyball is a phenomenal television sport. It has proven to be that in lots of different environments. So certainly that's an issue. But NBC has nothing to do with deciding for an NGB whether or not you do trials. All they do is tell you, if you do trials, here's what we think we can do. If you don't, you don't. That's your decision. They don't get involved in that at all.
Well, Doug, we appreciate you spending the time and sharing with us what's going on with beach volleyball. We look forward to following that story. Before we let you go, I wanted to switch gears a little bit. All right, that was Doug Beal earlier this week. We're now back live. The switching gears was going to the Hugh McCutchen discussion. We'll have some more of Doug next week talking about Hugh McCutchen and that whole decision process and how Doug, as Hugh's boss, handled it. A lot of information in that interview from Doug, a ton of information about the qualification process, how it's been developing, what's happening with it. We're going to have reaction about that later. We do have College Volleyball Weekly coming up on the other side of the break. I wanted to first mention ZAMPS, Orthosis for Athletes, big sponsor of our program. They're all about injury prevention. So even when you don't have an injury, think about ZAMPS. Go check them out at ZAMPS.com. Great, high-quality stuff to help you in your athletic endeavors. ZAMPS, Orthosis for Athletes. Right here on the Net Live, Kevin, Geeter, DJ Roche, and Reed has hit the outpost. He's shown up. We'll talk to him the other side of the break.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm noble. I'm from the most risky zone. Old. No place for more shifty global. More pistols, fresh than revolvers. We shooting all that is normal. But it ain't just because we want to. We ain't got nowhere we can run to. Somebody please press the undo. They only see just the things they're gonna do.
Crushed up linen, fly like Cessna. This type grew, I gave it birth. Now it's time again to give it a verse. Jamaican born, not a fan of the ganja. Clear vibes, Brooklyn to Somalia. Hear them goes in the background. Player, that is my sound. The green doesn't symbolize I made it on the top. Pioneer legend, and they call me Mr. Rock. No B word or N word, I don't need those words. Respect for hers, the game dried up, so we coming to Greece. Leading you right and treating you right to peace.
Live, DJ Roche spinning the tunes. He's going to post that each week on our Facebook page. Facebook.com/TheNetLive. Give it a look. DJ's playlist. I like that. Good music. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have coming up here our usual feature and the usual music. There's no change in this. It's the College Volleyball Weekly, presented each week in association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association. We have our correspondents, Rob Espiro, Jay Hossick, and Mike Sondheimer, to tell us the best of what happened and what to look forward to the next week, in this case, college men's volleyball. And SC continues to dominate, so they continue to get the music. We know that Mike struggles with this each week. Not his favorite to listen to. But until his team steps forward or someone else does, this is how it's going to be. It may be all the way through the national championship. All right, enough with the redo there. We don't need to re-spool it and go again. My goodness. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Welcome back once again. It was kind of a quiet week. Not a ton of matchups this past week, but Stanford, number 3, goes down to Cal Bapp, and number 2, BYU, loses to the Ridge. Mike, tell us about those two.
Well, Stanford basically was coming off of finals and played a lot of other players. Brad Lawson didn't play. It was an exhibition match for them. No problem. BYU had a very bad first night with Northridge, came back steady on the next night. And I think the bigger story of the week is Hawaii coming into Long Beach State and beating the 49ers twice and putting themselves in a position to potentially host in the first round. And that would be a very tough matchup for any team.
Are one of you guys going for pole position back there? What's going on back there?
It's my window. I'll shut it right now.
Appreciate that, Jay.
Jay, doing a lot of drag racing there in Happy Valley. What's that all about? So, Rob, tell us a little bit about those matches. Long Beach State going down to Hawaii 3-1 and 3-0.
You know, it's kind of hard to figure out what's going on with Long Beach because they started off the season really strong. I have a feeling they may have tapered off a little bit there. I noticed that in the beginning, Antoine Aguilar, the middle forward Long Beach, started off the season really hot, and his numbers have really cooled off in the last few matches. But you can't take away from what Hawaii is doing. Jonas Umloft, you know, basically has Player of the Week numbers this last week, since it was a pretty quiet week. Ended up in both matches with 44 kills at an average of 6.28%. And he dominates. And he actually had the support of Joshua Walker, who had pretty close numbers behind him. So Long Beach, I think, just is coming across the second hottest team in the MPSF, which is Hawaii, who's on a 6-match winning streak. So, you know, but you also got to watch out for UCLA behind there. They've got a 5-match winning streak. So, you know, there's still some tough matches to be had in the MPSF.
Jay, around the rest of the country, I look at your Penn State team. Pretty good week for you guys. You beat Ball State 3 straight and IPFW 3 straight. You guys starting to feel like you're really starting to play well after coming to the West Coast?
You know, we're coming into our own and we're figuring some things out, and you know, we're just trying to put the pieces together to be hot at the right moments. Yeah, we beat Ball State on Friday in 3. They're not a bad team. They look to be shifting around a couple of lineups, so not sure what's going on there. But they went on the next night to lose to St. Francis. They beat St. Francis in 3. So George Mason lost to Lewis and Loyola this week. Some big matches right there. So, for us, we're doing okay. And then Saturday, IPFW came in, and Arnie Ball's looking for his 500th win. And fortunately, we're going to let him get that in his home gym. We took care of them in 3. So it was a good weekend.
You did not want to see that go down in your gym, did you?
No, it's not. Well, you know, all the coaches in men's volleyball are good friends, and so Arnie comes up to Pav and says, you know, I'd really like to win 500 here pretty soon, and Pav just said, you know, we think it's better that you do it at your home gym. So we just let him know it wasn't going to happen in our place.
Sondi, any good matchups this week that we can look forward to?
I think it's a great week there. The biggest thing is that UC Irvine comes into Poly Pavilion Thursday night against the Bruins. It'll be the final volleyball match in the history of Poly Pavilion before it gets remodeled. But the collectors that you can shoot pictures, come in and see it. And it's a big match for UCLA trying to make the top 8. And for UC Irvine, which has an outside chance in the top 4.
Guys, I learned something new about college volleyball this week, that Harvard actually has a team.
Someone tell me if they had a team when I played, because we never had them on the schedule, and I had no idea.
Pepperdine had to bring in the smart kids to beat up on them.
It was nice for Pep to get a win.
Yeah, it was a close match for your Pepperdine guys, I heard.
Ouch.
My goodness. This show, sometimes I don't like this show at all. Well, Jay, tell us what you have upcoming this week, because there's not a lot to talk about with last week. We kind of covered it already. It's all about this upcoming week as we start to drive towards playoffs.
Yeah, we are getting close to playoffs. We have Princeton, speaking of the Ivy League, this week on Friday, and Rutgers Newark, who took your Pepperdine Waves 4, and boy, I'll tell you, the scores were pretty close. I thought you were maybe shaking a little bit there in your boots. So those will be two good matches for us. I'm excited to see Hawaii BYU, and I'm really excited to see exactly what Ohio State and Irvine are going to do this week. I think that's going to be it's going to be a pretty big match.
Yeah, Robbie, Ohio State-Irvine, that sounds like a good one. We've been wondering how legitimate Ohio State is. We may find out.
Oh, definitely. But I want to definitely come to your defense because Jay's giving you a hard time about your waves. The thing is, the banana slugs lost the Pacific in three, so I want to point that out.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't even a loss. It was a beatdown. And
well, see, the thing for me is Pepperdine has a history of being good, so it's fun to make fun of. The banana slugs, you just feel bad. I mean, they haven't been good since Jay played there. So
really? Really, Barney? We got to go there with that?
Well, regarding the Ohio State-UC Irvine match, I'm definitely looking forward to that. And I think, I mean, this is a big match for Ohio State to make a statement when they come out west. Yes, they play UC San Diego, and they tend to get overlooked, but you know UC San Diego is capable of the upset. So it's not going to be an easy night for them. They're going to come into Irvine, and I think Irvine is really beginning to click. They're getting a better lineup out there on the court, and they've begun to figure it out. So I think Kehoe Klanick and all the outsides at Ohio State are going to be up for a run.
Well, if they can defeat UC Irvine, perhaps Ohio State will garner more first-place votes than just from themselves. Southern California remains at number one in this most recently updated ABCA men's poll. Just came out. SoCal number one, Stanford number two.
Don't think Ohio State's vote is from Ohio State. I know who the vote's from, but it's not from Ohio State.
Okay. BYU, Ohio State, coming in at fourth place. Then UC Irvine, UC Santa Barbara, UCLA, Hawaii, Long Beach State, Penn State, Loyola Chicago, Lewis, Pepperdine still at 13th, that's suspect, UC San Diego 14th, and Pacific at 15th, and of course one first place vote going to Ohio State. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. It's going to be another interesting week of volleyball. We look forward to hearing from you next week after all these big matches.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. College Volleyball Weekly with the ABCA. We love that they get those polls to us. That's the first you ever hear the polls on this show. Comes out just a couple of minutes before we get to that segment. Who's voting for Ohio State? Can't vote them number one, can you?
Absolutely not.
It's ridiculous. All right, we're going to take another short break. Right on the other side, Jen Kessie coming up.
World champion.
I like that.
We'll talk to her about upcoming season, Olympic qualification, and choosing between Jeremy Roche and Kevin Barnett.
Tall.
Is she aware of this,
you're
by
both
the way?
Attractive.
Just so you know, you both are going to have a shot.
Small mohawk.
To plead a case. I'll give you 30 seconds each on why you're the better man.
30 seconds?
Yeah, maybe a minute.
Jeremy needs 15 seconds.
I don't need that long.
The Net Live. We'll be right back.
If you want to shine as your February clears, the word your March just disappears.
Live, VolleyballNetwork.com. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Been an interesting show so far. A lot of information from Doug Beal. We had Jamie Morrison on the program. Jen Kessie still upcoming. I want to talk about that Doug Beal interview there. There was a lot of information there. Geeter, I know you're learning things. I know people out there listening to the show are learning things about the proposal and what's out there in trying to get this process established in time for the 2012 games.
We learned a lot there. Obviously, Doug throwing out a lot of information. What I gathered was that, number one, I think the most important thing right now is the FIVP needs to approve this. That's number one. When and if that happens, then the U.S. will own the qualification process. Their point is we do not want the FIVB to matter 100%. It will matter in terms of where you're seated come qualification process time if you're the number one team in the world. But they want to have two qualification events end of June, month out before the Olympics, to choose our two Olympic teams. If you win the first week, you're in. If you get to the finals in the first week and lose, you're in the finals the following week, so you have two chances to get there.
I don't think it's a bad process. But we have another guy on the line here.
Was I even close?
Our old friend Reed Pretty. He's hit the seat over there in Russia. He's gone through Olympic qualification on the indoor side 3 times, been a part of the team. And Reed, what did you think about what Doug had to say?
You know, no hello, no how was your day? Did you spike like 5,000 highballs today? Just right into business, huh?
We don't have time today. We can talk to you about you another time. We haven't even talked about us. I went on a monster ski trip and hit 2 feet of powder yesterday. I haven't even mentioned it.
Yeah, we don't care, so my bad.
It's kind of like your highballs. No one cares about that either. But we can we can fight off air. We don't need to. Yeah, all right.
I learned a few things. I learned a few things about this process. I mean, for sure, this is a huge story. This is a huge event, and a lot of people care what happens with this. And what I didn't know was that USAV was given rights, but Doug made it clear that NBC, they have the rights to the Olympic qualification in terms of what the process is like, and I think they have the rights to the revenue on location in their partnership with IMG, but they don't have the rights, the revenue rights to the TV. Am I right or wrong in that? That's NBC's ownership?
NBC owns the right to air Olympic qualification or Olympic trials if they exist. So certainly the draw for this event from all sides and the competition that's been going on for it going back to 2000, you probably go back further, but at least back to 2006 with that Article 8 complaint, which really at the heart of it wasn't the support of athletes. It was the AVP wanting ownership of qualification. The athletes were a pawn, and I hope they realized that. It was about having the money to license that event, to run that event, to make money on that event.
Yeah, and another thing, Reed, that's definitely going to be a question, a problem, however you want to put it. You know, the top players that have spent years going over to the FIVB want to keep that process because they're playing against other teams around the world. They're gaining their points and they're positioning themselves and they're earning a great living over there, and that's how they're used to getting the Olympics. But then there's going to be other teams that are like, hey, well, only 3 teams are allowed. We can't spend the money to fly over to Stade and go all to these places and go through country qualifiers and qualifiers. And you know, it's a very select group that gets into these FIVB tournaments. So there's going to be 2 sides to this coin and probably a lot of arguing. And I'd imagine that player is going to be on different sides of the fence.
I have a hard time, Geeter, with that argument from the players because they've been arguing the very opposite point for a lot of years, trying to get that qualification on Olympic soil. And I think I understand definitely from a player's perspective the insecurity given the time sensitivity of this process. But we got to all agree, can't we, that having control over the Olympic qualification process under U.S. soil is a good thing? Like, I get it. Like, you know, injuries or breakups. And I understand in 04, we you know, there was a lot of speculation that we didn't send our best teams because of this very reason.
We didn't.
I get that it's not going to be perfect, but it's a little ironic to me that the players are flopping on their position. And maybe it's just a time-sensitive thing, and I'd love to hear more from the players on why they think the FIVB, all of a sudden they want to be back on the FIVB route.
I think this is interesting, though. We keep talking about the players.
We're talking about the top
whoever
4 teams
the players
on the FIVB
are.
Americans. You're talking about Todd Phil.
Yeah, and primarily we start talking about people who are represented by Ryan, what's his name, the agent?
Ryan Morgan.
We start talking about that. That's the...
Ferbs is not...
No, but Morgan, but no. The vocal, the players thing isn't... There isn't really a the players. That's what they were trying to do with creating a PBVA, some sort of entity to represent the players as a greater whole, but they can't even come together. I mean, one of the reasons Kerry wants this to be... or wants to have qualification a year out is because then Kerry can sell sponsorships for a year. She can be pumped out by NBC for a year. She can gain all that exposure and for herself, her brand, her and Kerry's or her and Misty's brand and make all the money. That's one of the reasons it benefits her to say, yes, I'm qualified. I'll be at the Olympics in a year. Let's work on deals with Gatorade or whomever else.
I mean, I remember back to 05 when the AVP was fighting hard to get the qualification.
To have it here. To have something similar to what Doug Beals just talked about. They tried to decertify USA Volleyball as the NGB in order to gain control of that process. So Reed brings up a great point that they've absolutely flip-flopped the players Whatever.
Well, when we say players, we know who we're talking about. We're talking about the top four teams on the FIVB, men and women, that play for the USA.
Yeah, but I think the players has become a different group. Right now, that's who the players are, as we're talking about the top four. And obviously, it would benefit them to have only international stuff qualified because they'd be the only people who would qualify.
The other players are all the rest that play played on the AVP and are now going to be playing NVL and Corona and USAVs. And
exactly. I think it benefits a team that hasn't spent a lot of time on the FIVB. So if you're going to talk about a Sean and John, Sean Scott, John Hyden, maybe they're going to have another great year. Maybe they'll peak into 2012 and play. But there's a team that hasn't played a lot of FIVB recently. So there's still a lot of questions there. But I don't have a problem with the team having to perform and having to show up and prove that you're the best. If you're the best, what are you scared of? You got to win two matches. And then if you win one, lose one, you only have to win one more. It's not that great of a barrier to cover. If you're really the best, come and prove it. It's okay, and it's more exciting for the sport if you come and prove it, and it's on television, and it's exciting. This is for the Olympics, rather than it just being in the background a year before outside the United States. Who cares? Give someone in the United States who's not a true volleyball fan, a volleyball nerd, or a volleyball dork who follows volleyball all the time, give them a chance to buy in through a trials process on NBC.
We're going to make a good point, Kevin, just about the fact that this is a big event for volleyball, and it's an opportunity to showcase one of the hottest Olympic events months before the Olympics happen. And I think for the casual fan, the person that's not tuning in on a weekly basis, a monthly basis, or even a yearly basis, who's that once every 4 year fan, they're going to be stoked on this event, and it's going to do great things for the sport, which in turn I think is going to put more money into the players' pockets in the long run. So I think as a player, you can't on one hand complain that our sport's not big enough and networks aren't picking it up, and then kind of take the position like they're taking. I see some inconsistencies there, but again, I understand with the time sensitive issue.
Right.
That's got to be insecure. And so I'd love, like I said, to hear more from the players about it.
Yeah, I understand the players' side of things and how it benefits them. But certainly good discussion about that. We will have more. And right now we have a little more. We have a person on the line who is directly affected by this. Geeter, our next guest.
One of my favorite players in the entire world. I've known her since she was an All-American at USC. She has 20 titles, including the reigning world champion. Ladies and gentlemen, two-time Queen of the Beach, Jennifer Ann Kessie, joining
us. Hi, guys.
God, just a ray of sunshine to the show. How are you, Jen?
I'm so excited to be talking to you guys.
My posture got a lot better.
Yeah, all of a sudden, Barney's perked up, Jeremy's perked up. We've had a lot of serious volleyball talk.
I'm going to get my comb out fixed,
Jen, on this show. So it's time to get you on here. Add a little ray of light. You're getting ready to start 2011 season. You and April together. Again, I think this is your fifth season together. Such a great partnership. Let's start with just, how you're feeling right now heading into this season. Such an important year.
You know, April and I had a tough year last year. I mean, we played well in the beginning. We really tapered off at the end. And we kind of just looked at our fitness once again. And we got a new trainer. We're working with CDM Fitness. And he's whipped us into shape pretty well. We're doing a lot of sand workouts. But I guess the biggest thing for us at the end here is we're playing a lot of teams, playing games, playing matches. And we're ready. Like, if we had to play tomorrow, we'd be ready.
Yeah, because, Jen, you came out.
I'm really happy that we have another month, but we could play tomorrow.
You came out last year, and you guys were as hungry as ever with something to prove. You mentioned tapered off at the end. Why do you think you tapered off?
You know what? It's weird. I don't want to make any excuses because, honestly, it was just we weren't playing well. We had a lot on our minds. It started where we weren't sure if there was going to be an AVP. Are we coming back? Are we not coming back? We packed for 4 weeks. We ended up staying for 9 weeks in Europe. We weren't signed up for the Poland event. We weren't signed up for the Finland event. We had to play in both those qualifiers, like just two extra matches on top of all the other stuff, being over there for 9 weeks. It's just like a lot of mental breakdown stuff that we were pretty bummed that happened, and we let it affect us. But And it's kind of the same thing this year, you know, like we don't know what's going on. Are we playing on a tour? Are we having trials? Are we, you know, so we've talked to some sports psychologists. We've gotten all that figured out. None of that's going to bother us, and we're just playing volleyball.
You kind of led me to my next thing because we can take this so many different ways, but let's get into it right away. We just had Doug Beal on talking about the Olympic qualification process. You are one of those teams that we talk about that is a top team in the world on the FIVB. So where do you stand on this, Jen? Because a few years back, everyone's fighting to get the qualification here in the United States. But now, as a top player on the FIVB, where do you stand on it?
You know, I've never actually fought to get it here. I was never one of the players that thought that was that to win an Olympic gold medal, you need to play teams that you're going to play in the Olympics. That's kind of always been my stance. I went along with the trials this time because we were promised it's going to bring so much money to the sport, $10 million, this and that, you're going to be pumped up, blah, blah, blah. And then we hear, well, it's going to be, we're paying to get on NBC. We're hearing a lot of things. So whether it's true or not, I really don't know. But to find out that it's not going to be a huge tournament, it might be in Florida in 3 weeks before the actual Olympics. It's, you know, to me, it's so late and it's so, like, it's not put together that it just doesn't seem like it would work. It just doesn't seem right. And then we actually fought for, we said the trials, great, but we also said there needed to be a huge international component. That's what every single player said. Maybe not Sean Scott, maybe because he doesn't want to travel. I don't know exactly what he had voted on, but I know we all sat in meetings and we said it needs to be more than two tournaments.
And this was other players too, Jen?
More than two tournaments.
This was other players too that aren't traveling on the FIVB? People were all voting.
Well, this is everyone who was at these meetings.
Gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
I'm not sure exactly. I'm pretty sure it was a big of the FIVB component. I'm sure people traveling. They asked us what we wanted, and we said we would be okay with the trials if it has a big international component. And now what they had told us, that all you need to do is play in two country quota, and now you don't even have to win. And that's it. So you can have a team playing in two country quotas, losing to an American team, and then playing all the domestic, maybe a Norseca, but none of those teams are going to the Olympics, and you could go to the Olympics if you win the trials. And that's not going to win us a medal. It is not going to win us a medal. I mean, I highly doubt it. And it, you know, it just, yeah, it is true. The best should come, and we probably should win those trials. We should. But what if someone's sick? What if someone's tired that week? What if, I mean, who knows what can happen? Especially on the men's side. The men's side is crazy. It's insane. Any team can win at any time, and it's tough to have to qualify twice.
Shouldn't that be
very difficult to have to qualify twice?
Jen, this is Barney. Thanks for joining us. And I wanted to ask you, but shouldn't that idea of the uncertainty make people more interested in what's going to happen with the sport? I mean, you mentioned earlier that you see some of the value in the marketing aspect of qualification.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I do think it. If it was marketed correctly and it was a big, big deal,
yeah,
like it should be, like it is for swimming, like it is for track, then yes, I do think there is a big market value for it. But it is also, the Olympics isn't always about money. It's about winning gold medals. And this, we're selling out completely. That's kind of how I feel.
Let me ask you a philosophical question about how this process is developing. Do you think some of the players are confusing the request for input with a ceding of control to whatever the players say or whatever the players want? Because it seems like the players will show up and play no matter what the qualification process is. The players will come for the opportunity to play for the games. And the end of the day, the players are not in charge of what that qualification process is. You're just being asked to talk about it. And are the players getting confused that they think that whatever they say should be adopted?
No, I don't think so. I do think we have some players that have a lot of power, have a lot of weight, have a lot of gold medals, have a lot of world championships under their belt. And it kind of seems like they know what it takes to be an Olympic champion. You know, I don't know. I think that this should have been decided a while ago. And it's really hard. It's so hard because you hear it from so many sides. But April and I, we talked to Dave Williams a few weeks ago, and we were in for the trials. We didn't want to do it. Not one part of us wanted to do it, but we were mentally ready to do it. And then we're hearing the players don't want to do it, and we're just back and forth and back and forth. And, You know, I don't know if the players have a big vote. What if none of us show up? What if none of us play in the trials, but we already qualified two spots? What happens then?
I guess none of you are going to the Olympics.
But we've qualified two spots, so then they can send whoever they want. That's going to look really bad. I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't know what the right answer is. I really don't. But all the players are pretty upset, and I think USA Volleyball is pretty upset too.
Well, it'll be interesting to follow that process as it continues to develop. Let's get back to you and April for a second. You mentioned the struggles you guys had and some of the things you've changed in your training and preparation for this year. What did you guys learn about your partnership, about the interpersonal side of things during your struggles last year?
That's a good question. We've been together now. I think this is our fifth year, which is crazy time. It's a good thing that we like each other. I think if we didn't, I think we could have broken up. You know, like just little bickering, little fighting like that, I think would have been elevated huge if it was something that we didn't really enjoy each other's company. And we really kind of just also looked at the big picture. And last year wasn't in the big picture as much as this year and the next year. And, you know, April and I do still have in our times when we're playing poorly, we have our moments of greatness. So there is always that little spark that we know, and we can look at each other and be like, we are good. We are a very good team. We just aren't playing great this second.
Jen, I got to take you back to a time in 2008, and I always thought that this was very impressive with you and April. And I think anyone who's ever played a competitive sport or coached a competitive sport can really appreciate the grind that you guys put in to get to the Olympic Games in 2008 and came up just short.
Yes.
Yeah, and when I say just short, I'm talking points away from you know, having a chance to win a medal, because at that time you were just as good as anybody. I mean, Carrie and Missy were definitely the number one team in the world, but you guys were right there. The way you guys came back after that, I always thought was impressive. I think a lot of people would jump ship at that time, maybe never be the same, but you guys came back and you won two international events and then went on to the AVP the next year and became one of the top teams. Getting through that time, can you go back to that now when you guys go through tough times and say, look what we've overcome?
I mean, absolutely. We took it as something like we seriously gave it our best shot. April started with 0 points.
Yep.
So we have someone that's starting at 0 points, and then you have Elaine and Nicole who were starting at maybe fifth on the FIVB. So we, you know, and I maybe was 17th or something at the time, and we really started really low. And the way we got up there, winning some tournaments and, you know, pushing them, and we were really disappointed, but we were really proud of ourselves, how far we came, and being that close to this goal that we've wanted for so long, it actually didn't deter us. It just said, okay, we looked at it, and we said, well, what can we do? We both said, okay, well, we both can lose 10 pounds. Perfect. Done. Okay, we're going to do that. Then what else can we do? We got a coach, found Jeff Conover. Coley Kyman was phenomenal. He just didn't have enough time for us. He had some kids, so we had to go with Jeff. And Jeff, he can travel with us to everything. He's there. We just made the little changes in our control, and we don't really look at it. It's funny. We don't really look at it as something that is like put us back. It actually like catapulted us forward, and made us realize what we are capable of.
Yeah, you know, Jeff has done a wonderful job. We've talked about Jeff on this show before, your coach. Jen, I want to talk about a personal thing with you then in 2008. You know, a lot of people don't know that you actually won in 2007. You guys won in Stavanger, Norway, so you had gotten that, you know, they say monkey off your back, that win. But on domestic AVP tour, you know, you had come in second a lot of times. You'd lost to Carrie and Misty. You played with Holly and you got to a final. Barb Fontana and you got to a final. You just kept knocking on the door. I think maybe 0-14 in finals. You get to the Queen of the Beach final. You finally win in Arizona after having a long, hard summer. What was that moment like? And you know, there's a lot of young athletes that listen to our show. It really talks about perseverance.
It does. It's funny. And I think everyone else kind of made it a bigger deal than it was to me. Getting in a final was sweet. Like, don't get me wrong, the first few times. And, you know, I think it was maybe Jeff Alzina, I'm mad at him for even telling me. He's like, oh, you've been in the final 13 times. And
it was
one.
Him, by the way.
Oh, I want to kick his butt when he said that. But he was not being malicious, but it was like, oh, yeah. Oh, I kind of brought it to my attention. Like, I really hadn't been thinking about it because I've been working really hard, getting to finals, like doing everything I could to win, and then it just wasn't happening. And then when he brought that to my attention, I was like, that's it. I'm over it. Like, this has to happen. And it's funny that it happened by myself because I think maybe the first seven finals, like, I played with different partners and all that stuff. And my first win being by myself was bittersweet because I would have loved it to be with April. Just getting through that and being like, okay, this isn't my monkey anymore. Like, that's it. This is over. It was pretty cool. And I went through a lot that summer. I was getting divorced, and it was a good time for me.
Jen, we got to ask you, what was your reaction when Carrie and Misty said they were getting back together?
It didn't surprise me one bit. I mean, I had talked to Misty a bunch, and she was over it. She was done. She wanted to do new different things. And she had told us that a couple times, but then came back with Nicole, you know. And then, so I was just waiting. I was waiting for it. This is a little later than I thought she was going to announce it. So I was thinking she was maybe going to come back because Olympic qualifying, at this point, she really only has to play in 2FIVB if she wants to, you know, possibly be in the Olympics. So she could have come back next year also. So I was thinking, if she was going to come back, she was going to come back next year. And it did surprise me she came back this year. But, you know what, I just think that she couldn't be away from it. She loves it too much.
You're listening to Net Live. We're talking to beach volleyball professional world champion Jen Kessy. Jen, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned your divorce a few years ago. And did you ever consider keeping the last name of Boss just for the marketing possibility of Boss Ross? Because it just sounded
Boss
cool.
Boss Ross is nice.
You know, what's funny is that I wanted to keep my last name originally, and then it went too good. So I was like, I should change it for sure. Like, that, it's just a sign, you know, I should absolutely change it. And to be totally honest, I didn't think about it twice to keep it. I really wanted to get back to Kessy and get back to my roots, and probably will be Kessy for the rest of my life.
Talk about how excited you and April are to defend.
You're just crushing people with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Nice
job. Yeah, that's
just
that's
to
a
keep,
good point.
Keeping my name. Keeping
okay,
my
okay.
Name, keeping right. my name.
Oh, Jeremy's smiling again. Good job.
Yeah, it doesn't mean I'm not going to get married again. It just means I'm not going to probably change my name.
One more serious question before we get onto the silliness that is this show. Talk about defending your world championship this year, you and April. Talk about looking forward to that process.
Well, we knew last year that the world champs were in Rome, so we took the Rome event very, very seriously this year. Not that we don't take everyone seriously, but really went in thinking it was kind of world champs, thinking, you know, it's probably going to be exactly the same, focus, where we're going to stay, what we're eating, our favorite little restaurants, you know, all that little stuff. And we actually won that event, and it was a big deal for us because we were looking into the next year also. So it's something that I'm excited to tell my kids someday that, you know, your mom's a world champion. I still get pretty excited about it. And, you know, actually, I spend a lot of time in Europe, and over there they think it's way cooler than they do here. Here it's like, well, if you haven't won an Olympic medal, you're not really that cool. But over there, world champion is like the coolest thing ever. So
yeah, world champion
over there.
World champion in sports and a lot of Olympic sports is a monster deal before you get to the gold medal.
Absolutely.
Now, Jen, you also have
yeah.
these swords. Can you talk about these swords you guys have from the Norway tournament, I believe? People probably seen them in the magazines, the pictures of you and April. They're unbelievable.
Oh, they're unbelievable. They're 50 pounds each, and I have them. I have this really pretty fireplace, and I have them on the sides of my fireplace. And every guy that comes into the house, that is the first thing that they do. They see the big screen TV, and then they run right over to the swords. And are these real? Can I use these? Pick them up and, like, they're phenomenal. It's a guy magnet. But
are there a lot
of
guys coming into that house?
I'm sorry?
Are there a lot of guys coming into that house?
Well, not exactly for me, but no, I'm kidding. But anyone that does come over, my brother plays with it every single time he comes over. But it's seriously the coolest thing ever. I think Phil Dalhauser was like, can I just touch one of your swords? Is before he won it last year. I'm like,
oh,
no,
fantastic.
I don't think so. You need to win your own.
Now, your partner, April Ross, married to Brad Keenan, Casey Patterson is his partner. From what I hear, and I'm getting this from Casey Boom Patterson, there is a huge match to be played. April Jen versus Brad and Casey. Tell me, is it on a women's net? They can't jump. Can you please take us through this? And what does the winner get?
Okay. So, you know what's funny is that I haven't even been consulted on this game. Like, I read it through Twitter that we are playing. But we played the other day, and it was just because they had stolen our antennas, and we wanted them back. So they said, well, you have to play us for it. So it's on a girl's net.
Mm-hmm.
Men cannot jump, but let's remember how gigantic Brad Keenan is.
Yeah.
And on a girl's net, he can hit down while standing. And then Casey's just good, and he's going to boom me every time he does something, and it's pretty annoying. But so we can jump. And it's pretty hard for Brad to block, like get any like hands over the net, but he's still pretty big. So I think it was 21-19 last time we lost.
Does that count?
Happy about.
Does that count in the series of 2 of 3?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I hope not. I haven't even been consulted on the next one. I've just been reading on Twitter what's going to happen.
Yeah, all that relationship talk about you and April communicating. I don't know. You're reading stuff on Twitter. Suspect.
I know. Oh, God. She loves Twitter. She is the Twitter master, and I called it Tweeter forever.
Yeah,
so I'm getting better.
Yeah, she wants to know if, like, you'd have, like, a bologna sandwich, ham, or fried Spam, which one you'd eat.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to go with probably bologna for you. I'm not sure.
Bologna? Oh, let's not do bologna. Bologna I ate as a kid, yes.
Fried Spam just doesn't, I just can't even think about
that. I'm sure it's good.
That.
Anything
that
is fried disgusting. Is good, right?
Now, Jen, on this show, and I know this is your first time.
She's seen the video.
Have you seen the video? Have you seen the video of you with...
It's on my Facebook.
Is that amazing?
It's phenomenal.
Matt Gardhoff, the guy, is a genius with dolls. We talk about a man playing with dolls, and he has a lot of talent, and people that don't know the show are like, what are you talking about? But when you see Matt Gardhoff's work, it's pretty impressive, Jen.
You know, it's funny. I got a call from my brother. He said, I don't know what this is, but if it's not a joke, you have a weird man out there. I was like, I watched it. I said, okay, don't worry. It's not some weird stalker.
Oh, that is so fantastic.
It's fine.
I don't know.
I love that he used Barbies. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, use Barbies.
Totally cool with that.
You and April, just perfect voices. I mean, it was really funny.
Oh, her volleyball stance?
Yeah, her serve-receive technique.
Her serve-receive technique is just one in a million. Now, on this show, I got to tell you, Jen, Barney, for the last year, been bothering me. When are we getting Jen on? We've mentioned your name so many times. Last year, we tried to get you over, you know, as you said, you're gone for 9 weeks. So we talk about how you and April are doing. Kevin gets excited. He perks up in his chair. And then Jeremy, you know, and he's jealous of me because we're friends. And then Jeremy starts coming on our show, and he's a regular. And, you know, Jay Roche's got... Yeah, he's got an in with you. You know, he knows you.
Blah, blah.
There's a little special PR.
Yeah, he's your personal DJ. So he's very confident and cocky. He's got tattoos. We all know you like that. So Jeremy's pretty cocky, kind of popping off to Kevin. So they kind of start getting into it on this show. You know, like, hey, you know, I'm kind of claiming Jen. So it's been a little bit of an argument. So we figured we're going to have a rose ceremony with Jen Kessy. And you only have one rose.
God.
And there's two men left, and that's Kevin Barnett.
Kind of disappointed she's not here.
And that's Jeremy Roche.
The rose
that's
why
I am upset that I'm not there, because I would like to see you kind of like down on one knee or like just see what you got for me. But now you're going to have to really use your words.
Yeah,
here.
Exactly. You guys are going to have to use your words. Jeremy Roche says, I'm not going to need many words, because that's just how Jay rolls.
Well,
Jay rolls.
I mean, what else is there to describe? He's got a mohawk and a three-quarters armband. So what? That's where it ends.
Wow.
That's pretty yummy to a lot of girls.
Thank you. Jeremy, would you like to go first, or would you like to go second?
Hey, I've got a really nice house that I wish I could show off, but actually I have to divorce the wife, and the house is going with the wife, so
the
maybe
kids,
never mind.
Kids too.
Never mind. Yeah,
Look, I may be shorter.
Oh, here he goes.
Here he is,
I may be a tad shorter than Jen.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But my personality, what I do for a living is so much cooler than what a lot of people do, that puts me up there.
Like 6'5".
Easily. And then the tattoo and the hair. What else? I don't know what else.
6'8".
What about painting your toenails?
I do my toenails. I have a little edge to me. That's the thing. I have a little edge, and I'm a really nice guy. I mean, seriously.
Wait, you can't play both sides today. You can't.
I don't have to play both sides. I am both sides.
Whoa. Oh,
wow,
you might have just that is a you, you
wow.
just stayed out of this one, Kevin.
I should have like prepared a script to pump myself up here. I didn't.
Well,
know,
you know,
I didn't
I'm
know he, I didn't know he spent his whole evening working on a paragraph about him.
Go ahead.
I can be bribed.
Go ahead,
that's
Kevin.
True.
Good luck. Good luck, Kevin.
Kevin, this is your final shot.
Well, let's see.
You may never have her on the line again. I don't know if she's ever going to call in again. I mean, we're going
to
beg her. But...
I used to be a really good athlete. Once upon a time,
good
I was
know.
Handsome and tan. Oh, wait, we're talking about currently.
I'm hearing it right now. I'm hearing it.
Currently, Kevin, she wants to know about you currently, not 2004.
Wow. I have no tattoos.
I look like the perfect date. Where would you take her, Kevin?
Where
yeah,
would
I would
take
like
her?
To know that.
Thank you, Reed.
Well, can we go to go-kart racing and supercross? Is that going to work?
Ooh.
That's edgy. Lots of guys with tats, and it's kind of that scene.
Hmm.
That may make you look bad, though.
No, see, it's not working.
Maybe go-karting's a little high school, but the motocross, maybe.
Oh, the motocross, maybe. I like that.
That's his favorite thing in the world, Jen.
All right.
Talks about.
Like I said, I pitched the house, but that's going away. So pretty much I'm left with my beat-up old Tahoe and and a motorcycle. But I'm a lot taller than Jeremy. And you can wear 3-inch heels, and it'll
Ooh.
Work out fine.
Ooh. And as a tall woman, that
point.
Is a big factor. Sorry, Jeremy.
I'm not intimidated by the heels, though, just in case anybody's wondering.
Yeah, but it's not your problem. It's hers.
No, I know. I'm with you.
It's just terrible to look down on something that small when you're wearing big heels.
I'm not happy with your tone right now.
I mean, Jen, this goes on. You don't know this. This goes on the show all the time. They have a little bit of a rivalry, and it's about my friend.
And honestly, if Matt Gardhoff could find a doll small enough, he could make a thing about this. But there's no Jeremy Rocher doll out there. You can't make a Ken doll shorter.
Notice,
maybe he cuts them off at the knees and attaches the feet with
that,
glue.
Notice that Kevin is taking digs at me, and I haven't taken one dig at him. I'm just saying, he's
That's
nervous.
True. You are taking
wow.
an arrow, but that doesn't do well for politicians either.
That's
so it's
true.
Tough.
Jeremy, when you don't have your athletic prowess left, you just have to bring everyone else down to your level.
I understand.
Jen?
So am I giving a rose to someone?
You have to give a rose.
What is my...
Yep.
I do?
Yep.
Oh. This is difficult.
I know.
This
imagine.
This is difficult.
You know what? You could sleep on it
Ooh.
And actually come in studio. We invite you in studio, and you could
producer.
Actually bring one rose and give it to the winner.
You know what? I would like that. And you guys get to send me things in the mail, or maybe email some things.
You already
that,
have
right?
swords. What
yep.
else am I going to send you? You have 250-pound swords. How do you beat that?
Yeah. This is great.
Yeah,
Jen's going to come back on.
Now it's going
to
cost me.
You know what? I would love to come with April. She is
yes,
hysterical.
That would be great.
Together. That would be
she will
awesome.
MC it. And Reed, the producer, comes in with a great idea.
Dude, we'll bring in all kinds of chairs here to the loft. We'll do it upright.
Because, listen, Jen came on the show, and let's be honest, she killed it. And you guys fell in love with her even more than you already were.
Jeremy, we're going to have different music for next time. Preview
Done.
Our music for next time.
Done. Oh, you want to preview?
You have
you know
it,
I
right?
like hip-hop, Jer.
Oh, I know, but Kevin wants this.
What is...
That would be the dating game theme, if you're wondering.
Pretty good stuff
Love
right there.
That.
Love it.
All right. So next time.
Next time we will get Jen
next
again.
Next time I will bring a rose. Bring one rose. Yes.
Couple weeks. Are you around in 2 weeks? We got to get you before
I
the season.
I am around in 2 weeks.
So we got to
yep.
get her before
sure.
the season. And Jen, you know, you can download this show on iTunes when you're traveling around the world with all your FIVB friends. This is it. We talk about you a lot. It's time for you to download the show and get all those FIVB people on board.
I that is the first thing I do. You already have two French guys listening right now.
Oh, yeah. The French guys I heard are in town. Andy's in town.
They are in town.
I like to
yeah.
call them the French Feast. That's actually in real life, guys, not in your little dream fantasy worlds. That's your real competition. That's your real competition, the French Feast.
And he kind of looks like a Ken doll.
He does. He's got a lot of Ken doll Toy Story 3 in him.
See? That's okay. Jeremy's out of that category. I'm right in there, baby.
I love it. I love it.
My ancestors are French, so.
French?
Yeah.
I was talking about the Ken doll thing.
I
the French
care.
Thing was up by the side.
Ken doll doesn't have, can I say, package?
Wow.
Just saying.
Wow.
Sorry, Reed.
Wow.
That was fantastic.
You're going eunuch.
The Ken doll.
All right.
Thanks, Jen, so much.
Thank you, Jen.
Loved having you on, and thanks for all your honesty.
Love
and
you guys.
Stuff.
That
love
was
you
so fun.
All righty. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Jen.
Talk about a
okay,
ray of light, just right. sunshine. Right?
Oh.
She came on like so excited, perky. That's exactly what we needed.
I like that we got some serious stuff from her before we went sideways.
Yeah. You know what? I've known Jen a long time. I knew she would be honest. She's not afraid to give answers.
That's
not afraid
a great
to fight. No, there's not. That's what I think I love about, not I think, but what I love about a lot of our top professionals in our game. Hey, there's an opinion, and they're not afraid to say it. You look at any other sport, guys are way too PC. They're way afraid to step out on the line. And maybe it's because we're fighting for every scrap in this sport, but when it comes to beach volleyball players, indoor volleyball players, they're fighting for something. They're not afraid to share that. And I think you have to respect that.
I'll tell you what else I love was the fact that she came back stronger. After you talked about some of the failures or I don't know, failures at the end, but inability to get over that hump and missing Olympics or the finals or any of that stuff, none of that stuff got to her. And you find that in so many elite athletes. It doesn't get to them. It only makes them reassess and come back stronger.
Every level that I looked at it, Barney, friend level, announcer that's involved in the beach game, and then fan or a coach, I was so impressed with how they bounced back. And I know she says it catapulted them more than brought them down, but it was just amazing. I mean, they made an amazing run and were this close, but bounced right back, won tournaments, got better, and didn't see the 4 years away as, oh, my God, how are we going to go through this process again? Let's get right back at the end of 08 and start dominating and start winning tournaments. And they did. And their chemistry, best on the beach. So strong, through ups and downs. And she hit it on the head when she said, it's nice to like each other. It helps to have a built-in friendship. I'm telling you, the first tournament they ever played together was in Miami in the rain. They made it to the finals and lost to Nicole and EY. And Sinjin asked April Ross the question, this is your first final. And he went on to ask the question. And April goes, this isn't my first final. It was actually her first beach final. But her mentality, that kid's been in finals her whole life. She won 2 national championships at SC. She won several club national championships for Orange County, Newport Harbor High School. That's just the way she was built. I mean, this team was, you know, from that day on, they were together thick and thin.
On the business side of things, I think it was great, too, that she was, in talking about qualification, even though she wasn't necessarily happy with it, she's able to separate herself a bit from what's best for the sport.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when you talk about these athletes, both individually, but then also as partnerships, what you have is a bunch of independent businesses.
Yep.
Jen Kesey is a business.
Yes, absolutely.
She happens to be partnered with April Ross, the business.
She's a brand.
Right. And that itself is also a brand.
Yep.
And the interests of that brand and those individual brands inside of that are divergent from the sport in many cases. And I think some of the players have a hard time separating themselves from what's best from the sport, what's best for them and their brand from what's best for the sport. And you see that in a lot of other sports as well. But in volleyball, it's magnified because there is that kind of inconsistency with the delivery of the product and now a completely Wild West mentality with the delivery of the product domestically.
Absolutely agree. And getting into her, she mentioned Jeff Alzina, who texted me the loving, stinging motivation. You know, he was the one that had that number, the 0-14 in finals, you know, and we joke about it, but, you know, to watch Jen, and Jeremy was there with me, you know, come close in finals and lose crazy ways in finals, but just kept coming back, same smile, kept competing, and to win that individual event, you know, at nighttime, it was just the scene was set. It was after the Olympics, as she mentioned, going through a divorce. It was an incredible moment for a lot of people, and to watch like all the players on the stage cheering and standing, it was an intense game. She's battling with Branna. I mean, they were going at it actually, and it was a great moment. And now she's won 20. You know, you think back to 08, she, you know, was winning her first one. Now she has 20 wins, and it's, you know, talk about perseverance.
Is Matt Furbringer the equivalent on the other side? I mean, Matt and Casey, remember them getting to finals all the time?
Yeah,
they had
some crazy record
of not winning finals.
Interesting you say that. They broke onto the scene together, you know, 2002 or 2003, when I was in their first tournament. You know, Matt was a week in the States from playing indoor, and Casey picked him up. They went right to a final, had Fenoy and Dax 8-6 at the switch, ended up losing, I think, 17-15, had a couple match points. They ended up having match points against Louie and Ack on 3 or 4 different occasions in Hermosa.
Yeah.
They lost to Gibb and Jewel. They were 0-7, I think, and then won a final. And I think they're maybe 6-1 since that point. They've won 7 tournaments total, 6 together. And but yeah, they were 0-7, and Barney, it happened in a matter of, you know, a year. They were in a lot of finals and came up short. So definitely had to persevere. The interesting thing about Jen's was it was over a long period of time and with different people, Holly, Barb, I mean, Nancy Mason, all these different people that she played with, EY, whoever she played with, she would just team up with and get to a final, and over a long period. And it was also during a time when Misty and Carey were dominating the world. You have to remember this, winning 90 in a row. You know, not, it's not like anybody was winning. The only ones who won on occasion were, you know, EY and Holly before they really broke onto the scene, and then EY and Rachel won a few. Jenny and Annette might have slipped in one. You know, it wasn't like people were winning out there. You know, so Jen was just persevering through the whole thing. It was incredible.
Speaking of the indoor side of things, and Matt Furbringer almost going back to playing indoor, but instead going on to a successful outdoor career, there's a lot of stuff happening. This is playoff time, not only for individual leagues as they wind down their season, but also for the Champions League. And Champions League Final Four is happening. The final for the women's was yesterday in Turkey. And Reed has had some great contact with that. His own team is headed to the finals on the men's side this upcoming week, I believe it is. Correct, Reed?
That's right. Yeah, in Bolzano, Italy. And I think the thing that's noteworthy, that's worth mentioning here regarding the Champions League, is that it's a big deal here in Europe and worldwide, and there's a network that we've often plugged on the show called LaOla1.tv. And there's no place in the world that's telling a complete volleyball story except them. And their numbers recently, if you follow them on Twitter, you'll notice that they had over a million uniques in February. And it's just amazing what they're doing in terms of streaming all of these matches worldwide. Networks are picking them up, broadcasting them in different countries. I think it's something like 65 countries worldwide.
Yeah,
millions of people are tuning in, and what's awesome about this is they're showing this live. And as we mentioned a few weeks ago, the three teams for the men's that got into the Final Four, one team is automatically in because they host it, which is Trento on our side. All of them went to a golden set. So if you can imagine it being 1-1,
explain that golden
after a
set,
home and away. Yeah, it's a home-and-away series, basically. And the round of 12 and the round of 6, basically you go to their place and you play a match, and then you go to your place and you play a match. And if after those two matches the score is tied 1-1, just in terms of matches, not games or anything, then it goes to an automatic golden set to 15. And what they found was when it used to be aggregated, we already covered this on the show before, basically you would win the sets that you needed to get the distance that you needed to, and then it would be a fire sale and you would put the entire second team in and it would be terrible for TV. So they made it to where it was a head-to-head match, and then it went into a golden set. Well, all three play-in matches into the Final Four went to a golden set. They were all live, and it was just unbelievable TV. I can't say enough about what they're doing, and I really hope that we in America can kind of take a look at what they're doing and try to mimic it in terms of telling a complete and live story in Volleyball in America.
And they're doing a great job. It's LaOla, L-A-O-L-A, the number one, .tv. And you can watch our very own Reed Pretty this upcoming week. Reed, does it start on Friday or Saturday?
Saturday is the first match, and we play against another Russian team.
So starting out on Saturday, it'll be what, afternoon or late morning here in California. Get an opportunity to watch the Final Four. Really some tremendous, great volleyball worldwide. This is a professional level. This is the highest professional level.
And when Reed first told us about it on email, he hit it on the head. You see this drama unfold live like we do here when we're watching March Madness. That's the only thing I can equate it to. You know, you're watching these games and these buzzer beaters and these close losses and the calls at the end of the game, and you know when it happens live. And you see it, and you can talk about it, and it drives it. So when you're watching these unbelievable volleyball matches, and these crowds are insane. It's like soccer, Reed.
Yep.
I mean, they're playing in these incredible places.
12,000, 15,000.
12,000, 15,000 people, and they're standing, and they're yelling the whole time. You're like, oh, my God, this is happening in our sport. It's really cool.
Yeah, we talk about streaming kind of being the future. You know, it's not as expensive as trying to get on network and what we've been doing here at the house, my wife and I, is we just connect our laptop. You know, there's these devices now that basically connect your laptop to your TV via, I think it's a VGA cable. And you can literally, it's like watching TV. And it's pretty awesome where technology is at. And I think that in the volleyball community, we really need to grab hold of this and take it further.
All right, LaOla One TV. Check it out. It's going to be great. Let's about wrap it up for this week, gentlemen.
Is that it?
That's it.
Matt, we had Matt Boyce on hold for a long time, and he just hung up on us.
Well, we've executed a full pull here. You know, we've gone 2:25, and I thought a lot of it was fun. Some of it informative, some of it fun. I think Doug Beal, you got to revisit that one. It's going to keep going. That process is going to keep going, but we're going to revisit that some more. I think we'll have more reaction next week, not only from Doug, but from what Jen has said and from what Carrie said. I think there's a lot of information there about not only what's going to happen now, but the broader vision of what's best for the sport.
Yeah, and Jamie Morrison came in, Mike Lingenfelter with some juniors talks. We definitely had a wide array of great topics on the show. And Jen, what a perfect closer. She came in and really dominated.
Yeah.
And I like what she said about it needing to be a big deal, that they'll sign up on it if it's a big deal. But if it's just a bunch of USA volleyball banners around a beach court, that's not going to cut it. I can definitely appreciate that.
Well, the comparison to track and swimming is apt, but it's going to take a while to get to that point. You can't expect to do it first time. This is a brand new process. Never had control of it before. The FIVB held all the cards before. So it's going to take a little while, but she's very right about you need to have the right people in there marketing it the right way. And I hope that that's the direction the sport is going, because it'd be huge for everybody. Reed, good luck this week.
Thanks, guys.
Tear it up. We'll look forward to talking to you on the other side when you're bringing home a European championship. That'll be sick.
Boom! Try to give one boom.
We'll get to our
NBA
volley team too next week, finally.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in. It's been a lot of fun. Hope you have a great week. We'll be back here like normal next week.
Who is
10 a.m. Monday.
Who can be the schnookie of our show?
That's a great question.
Think about it,
Facebook,
people.
Or thenetlive@gmail.com. Who's the schnookie of the volleyball world?
Who can come in and be the schnookie?
Might hurt some feelings. The Net Live, thanks a lot. For Reed and Geeter and DJ Roche, I'm Kevin. We'll see you next week.